government's been trying for almost 30 years to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and it's been unsuccessful. And beginning in 2002, there were three outbreaks of coronavirus, we call them SARS, at that point in MERS. The first SARS was a natural illness, jumped from a bat to human beings. The second two were lab-created that escaped and infected human beings. And so the governments of China and a consortium of Western governments all got together and put millions and millions of dollars into an effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And between 2002 and 2012, 2014, they worked very hard to do that. And what happened is they developed about 35 vaccines, and four of them were really promising. They chose the four most promising, and they gave them to ferrets, which is the animal that is most analogous to human beings when it comes to upper lung respiratory infections. The ferrets had a brilliant, robust, and durable antibody response. But then something horrible happened. And those ferrets were challenged. When they were exposed to the wild virus, they got horribly sick. They got inflammation throughout their bodies, and they died. Wow. And the scientists remembered that something very similar had happened in the 1960s, where they had developed a vaccine for RSV, which is very similar to coronavirus. It's an upper respiratory infection ailment. They had skipped the animals and given them directly to 35 children. And the children, again, had developed a very robust antibody response. But when those children were exposed to the wild virus, they got very, very sick, much sicker than unvaccinated children. Two of those kids had died. It was a scandal. And they realized when the same thing happened with the ferrets, that there was something that they called enhanced immune response. It's also called pathogenic priming. And what it means is that when you get the vaccine, it appears that you have an antibody response, but when you actually encounter the wild virus, you become much sicker. And it actually creates a pathway that virus hurts you a lot more than with unvaccinated people. So this was
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
That's odd. Never starts auto-mute. Monday, June 7th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Everything is conspiring to go work against me today, it would seem. A couple of technical problems before we got started. That's why it's a very late start today. But we have a really, really powerful show for you today. Some really good follow-ups, some stuff that we've already been talking about, but some really big breakthroughs in information. What's funny is it's seemingly this is how it's been going across this whole coronavirus process. We'll say something, whether it's a theory or not. Then we find things to prove that theory, and it's fake news, deleted, censored, disparaged, until it later breaks from something else that's, confirmed. And we've seen this over and over and over. And a lot of this has just been things that we theorized based on valid concerns that turned out to be correct. They were disparaged and dismissed. I mean, a good example would be the lab leak theory, but that doesn't mean that then is the only thing happening or that that's even correct. It just means that we brought it up as a possible discussion and they go, oh, you stupid idiot conspiracy theorist. Get that crazy madness out of here. And then breaking news a year later, right? Like it's really, they must see how pathetic that looks. But a lot of the average people never saw us talk about it first. And that's what a lot of this is happening today. So we're going to talk about Pfizer being caught for something we already knew was happening, something we've been talking about in regard to the animal trials being skipped, you know, rushed through later in the wrong moment. So it's too late to find out whether it would hurt the people. You know, we'll go through all this today. But even more in-depth information coming from, I saw it first on the Defender, Children's Health Defense, always doing a great job. And coming from, I believe it was true, I don't want to say the site wrong, I'll show you as we go through it, the original site where they got it from, and the documentation you can look at for yourself, showing you quite clearly that they know that they did something wrong. They skipped things they should have done. They cut corners where they shouldn't have. With that, cutting corners in any kind of a safety process is probably not a good idea. And guess who else knew that? government, people in charge, authority figures who are screaming at you to do what you're told, knew that and didn't tell you. Now, we also have some more information around some new drugs that are being approved, except that everyone says it doesn't work and they did it anyway, because we know how great they are at safety trials. We'll go through that and show you why it might be happening, as well as some information around the vaccines and the updated VAERS information that's increasingly getting much more damaging and alarming. And then some interesting conversations around masks that are another study showing you everything we've already talked about. I didn't even think it was worthy of putting in the title because I feel like we've already put this conversation to bed, but it's a new study and it's very, very telling. And I recommend you take a look at it. We'll go through it all today. You can research it for yourself, but also a really alarming discussion, something that I just kind of fell into today while researching other discussions around the vaccine and really just kind of like nanotechnology and where this great reset is going in the plan. I have a great point from Corbett today. We'll touch on the, you know, the transhumanism direction that we've talked about, which is not even joking, not hyperbolic, extinction of the human race in a context that's, you know, progression, but extinction nonetheless. But in this research, I found something called a nanobody. Now, it's interesting because as someone who has been really immersed in this topic for long before COVID-19, but even more so, I've never even heard of a nanobody. Now, maybe that's just because I just didn't come across it, but it's something you want to know about. Maybe it's like what you think it sounds like. It is an antibody, except it's an engineered antibody. And these are working inside your body, inside of delivering. I mean, we'll get into it, but these are things that I argue could possibly be used right now. Sort of like all the other things that are going, this is what we need to use. And we're going, wait a minute, that seems like it's being used now based on science, based on evidence from your documentation, but no one's talking about it. A lot of stuff like that today. And some more important things about censorship and YouTube and in regard to people like us and whether we have a right to be out here talking, recovering, documenting, being the press. Because you know, you should know that you are the press. Anybody with a camera and the willingness to be to document something is the press. The Constitution, the Supreme Court has roundly held this up, but you know who doesn't hold it up? The elitists. The media infrastructure, who sees themselves as a protected class, and then the government and the institutions that treat them like they're special. That is the only reason this happens. We'll get into the law about it and how the law doesn't matter when you're dealing with powerful people who don't care about the law and who have the ability to pass laws when they want, but don't care about them when they choose to break them and apply them only to you. But I've talked long enough in the beginning, but let's get into some interesting stuff to start off that I wanted to let you see about before, let you see so we could talk about it before we get into the main topic. We're going to start right out of the gate with the important one about Pfizer, but a couple of quick notes. I want people to see this because I'm not going to get into foreign policy today. I've got two articles coming out from Robert Inlakesh, possibly tonight, at least probably one tonight, a great article from Derek on that note coming out probably tomorrow morning, but in regard to foreign policy, more coming your way. There has been three, as far as I can tell, I think there's even been more, but three main explosions in very important places in Iran, and no one seems to care. As I said, it's amazing what can get ignored by the mainstream media. Well, that is their real job, to obfuscate. We need to remember that. But such as three major explosions in Iran over the last few days. Apparently, their largest ship, a steel factory, and an oil facility. All very important. All after Netanyahu openly threatens the elimination of Iran. Even if it causes problems for the U.S., we don't care. Crickets. Now, I actually spoke with Robert about this briefly at the end of our recent interview, and he was of the mind, at least at the very least, that he doesn't think this is necessarily connected. He can't prove it. He hasn't heard anything yet. Doesn't mean it isn't. I just find it very telling, and here's the most recent, a steel factory. Let's see if the explosion. There it is. So, nonetheless, isn't it worthy of discussion? If I was in any position in the main, or I mean, I'm doing it now. That's the point. If I was in their shoes, I would be like, well, here's an interesting reality. Netanyahu, a head of state, openly threatened to eliminate an entire country. And what do you know? Days later, we see massive explosions happening. Worthy of discussion, but nope, not for them, because they're not here to give you truth. They're here to obfuscate realities that don't fit the narrative. That's what their job is. Whether they even realize it or not, I argue a lot of them do realize it. They don't care. They wouldn't be in the position if they didn't already hold certain beliefs, as Noam Chomsky's put it in the past, manufacturing consent. But Interestingly, there are people who are standing up right now. This is as of today, saying, well, this is a former Iranian official saying it's sabotage, hostile action, at least possible in the sinking of their largest ship, their Navy, not some, you know, what's the term for it? I don't know. Something delivering something. This is a naval ship. This is an act of war, guys, if this was an act. But again, it's not the first time. Israel has done this openly. The United States has done this openly more than once, and they show restraint. Pretty crazy. Now, I'm not saying I know for sure, but why is nobody talking about that? Well, because there's a lot more happening right now, and people are being distracted with things like Fauci emails and all these different side notes of things we already know. Again, I'm not to say, and I'm sure you noticed, I didn't end up talking about it. I had it all lined up, but it was just, I went through it again the other day, and I said, why am I talking about this? It's not that it's not important. There's plenty of stuff in those emails, and I please take time to dig through it. If you find something that we haven't already discussed, throw it my way. But I'm just getting frustrated about how people are shifting to the emails as if that's the focal point. Those are superfluous, or not superfluous, but they're secondary. They're supportive. You should put that email about the mask discussion he has alongside the science that we've discussed that shows that they don't work. And in fact, the secondary point he makes about how they're actually still no, that's even incorrect. So he admits that they're too small, that it passes through the virus passes through, or the particles pass through the mask, so they're not useful, and then show that he's lying. And we don't need his email stating this to somebody we don't know about that when we have it right in front of us. Right. There's so much more around this. And that's why things like this get ignored, because there's a lot of limited hangouts and psychological operations happening all the time. That's what they do. Now, I argue my opinion, of course, that the emails were Washington Post and BuzzFeed, a couple of great, you know, truth seeking journalist outlets out there, got this information and put it out there. And now what are we not paying attention to? The front line of this right now is what's happening in regard to the vaccination aggressive push, even though we don't need it, even though we're not in an emergency, even though the thing's not as dangerous as they said, even though asymptomatic transmission is not really there, even though kids are not even in danger. All of these things are huge. And every day, one more goes, or every moment, one more goes in someone's arm. Meanwhile, we're talking about how Fauci gain of function, China bad guy. We know all that stuff. Sorry, I just had to get that out. It's frustrating me. Not that you shouldn't be paying attention. Again, I'm not trying to disparage anybody for, you know, saying it's bad for you to look at it, but make sure we're looking at everything else. Here's another huge point that I want to give real big props to Abby Martin for, because this was a huge stand that nobody paid attention to. A federal judge just ruled that Georgia's anti-BDS law is unconstitutional. Not the first time, by the way. They don't care, right? The so-called precedent-setting situation the system we have in this country never applies to powerful people, where you will continually see precedents about judges saying that's against the law, that's unconstitutional, and they'll just do it anyway. We're going to get into a couple points like that today, where governments, states are saying we don't care. Actually, that applies to the end of the show about the whether you're oppressed or not. The Constitution is clear. The Supreme Court has been clear more than once, and yet you'll still have states like Washington go, nope, you're not a journalist unless you work for Fox or CNN. And that is literally unconstitutional, but nobody cares. Good job, Abby, for standing up for what you believe in and showing that if you just have some gumption, some constitution, personal constitution, and stand for what you believe in, you can actually make things change. That's what it's all about. And of course, seeing beyond the two-party illusion. One last point, of course, as we're not going to get into this today as well, but seeing as how it's just nonstop, you might have noticed that after we had the show about the cyber attacks that are clearly tied, they're just a part of some massive agenda. They compared it to 9/11. Who did not see that coming? And as I said, seeing as how they clownishly compared January 6th to 9/11, pretty sure this has lost all its meaning, other than to insult all those who suffered and still suffer due to 9/11. And of course, the involvement of our government and other parties in regard to why that actually happened. And even still stopping the people who got hurt, such as the first responders who are still to this day suffering from cancers they got from being there, even though they're told it was safe by people like Giuliani, are still are struggling to even get funding for their problems from the very government who are calling them heroes and we know we're involved. It makes me sick. But by calling on its memory to push fear about whatever its agenda de jure, saying 9/11, this is like another 9/11, because we know that's just what do they call it? A dog whistle, however they like to use these terms today. But it's going to keep going, so pay attention. But going on quickly to the censorship just to make a quick point about it because it really doesn't matter. Yes, they finally did it. YouTube, again, for the third time, finally did it, censored my channel on YouTube. But, you know, as you've been paying attention, we've been trying to make that happen. But weird, aren't we on YouTube right now? Yes, we are. You know why? Because we're using one of our pirate streams. This is a TLAV pirate stream. That's what this is. We're going to, just like we were doing before, and the very reason we wanted to push them to censor the other channel was because YouTube is dead. Boycott YouTube. It's over. They have broken themselves. That doesn't mean they're not going to be popular or they're going to still be, or they won't be used. But what they are or were is broken. They will censor whatever they don't agree with. They will completely go against their own guidelines to achieve something for people powerful above them. And they will literally sell you out for their own agenda. You all know this, by the way, but I just wanted to point this out. We're going to continue to use the TLAV pirate streams. I've got about 40 plus people at this moment who are willing to let me use their channels to push this through. So it'll still be punched through. They'll still censor it when they find it. Who cares? We don't care about YouTube. It's about hoping that people right now are watching it who didn't expect this to jump up in front of them in their channel or on their stream, or because whoever this is today, Scott Alberts. Thank you, Scott, for letting us use this channel. Maybe YouTube doesn't recognize that this is coming from TLAV and recommends this in somebody's video who didn't realize they were being recommended something that was full of truth that they didn't want them to see. And I'll tomorrow jump to the new channel. And then after that, jump to the next one. And we'll rotate through. And you can reach out to me at ryan@thelastamericanvagabond.com if you want to be a part of hashtag TLAV pirate streams, because YouTube can't stop it. And you know what? It drives them crazy. But on that note, go anywhere else. Literally anywhere else. If you are right now watching and you're aware that YouTube is doing this, go to Super U, right? Go to any other location for those of you right now, just since I'm talking about it. Here's the new platform, live TLAV playing right there in the front, right? This is a platform you can use instead that has all the same features and all the same bells and whistles. But on top of that, you can also use Odyssey, which we're streaming on. Rockfin, which we're streaming on, BitChute, which we'll upload afterward, or any number of other places that are exponentially better than YouTube, because they will censor just like this. Now, here's the funny part. I just said, finally, because we've been trying to make them censor us again, because my channel, 100,000 subscribers or not, I'm past all that meaningless nonsense. That gets people to go there instead of everywhere else. So I'm glad it's gone. They'll probably reinstate it later. As I said, will you soon apologize and admit you were wrong again like last time? Because that's what they did. They sent me the email and said, sorry, we were wrong. We'll reinstate your channel because you weren't violating the rules. Okay, they put us back. But I said, don't bother. Exposing this overt censorship of verifiable fact was the whole point. Get ready for some TLAV pirate streams. As I said down here, I love how you DM me about making yourselves better. Admit I was right, censored wrongly. And then, here's the kicker, you censor me for, literally, the same content replayed as a clip. But you just can't beat that. So they censor me for something. They say, oh, wait a minute, we were wrong. That's actually not wrong content. Here's your channel back. Then I finally get around to playing my clips. And I play a clip that was from one of the videos they said was the reason I was censored. And they censor me again. Whether they're so stupid they can't recognize what up from down, or they just don't care about rules and they're just arbitrarily deciding every moment based on algorithms, whatever else, because it's not about truth. It's about subjective content, which makes it difficult for them to understand who to censor. So they did it again. And I said, so was it a mistake or not? Frankly, I don't care. You guys are broken. Think about how stupid that is. So it wasn't about right or wrong. They wanted me back for some weird reason, or I don't care. Move past it, go somewhere else. Here are all the things I uploaded today. All the clips from Super U that you can see. Same thing on BitChute. All here, all these clips that you can see. These were the clips I was uploading when they censored me again. Weirdly enough, it was this video that triggered it. Doctor calls out mask myths. Of course, I then restreamed that right away onto YouTube using a pirate channel just to piss them off. But on that note, let's get into Pfizer skipping the trials. The things we know already that are now being confirmed by more documentation and yet still being ignored by mainstream media. Why? Because people that talk about this stuff get censored. That's why. And the media is actively a part of that, as we just talked about the other day, where the media are the ones who reached out to Facebook and said, hey, what about this thing? And then the moments later, they deleted it and said, oh, good. Thanks for pointing that out. Thanks for telling us what to censor. If you don't see why that's alarming, then you're not paying attention. That is fascism, right? The idea, especially with the government, especially since both the media and these platforms are wildly interconnected with the government, this is state censorship. And they don't want you seeing stuff like this. Pfizer skipped clinical testing and cut corners on quality standards. Documents reveal. Now, here is the actual the place where they're citing. You can read it through for yourself, all the documentation. I've gone through it myself. But don't trust me. Look at the documentation. Come to your own conclusions. Now, the defenders did a great job of breaking this down. I'm going to read the first half of this for the most part. And I want you to, I have a lot of points to show while we go through this. Now, it says new documents obtained by Trial Site News suggest. Now, again, I wasn't familiar with this site. Doesn't mean anything. Look at it. Read it. Look at the source material. I don't care if it came from warfakenews.com. If it has literal source material that you can literally look at and literally think for yourself about, that's all that matters. New documents obtained by Trial Site News suggest routine quality testing issues were overlooked in the rush to authorize use of the Pfizer BioNTech COVID vaccine, and that U.S. and other governments are conducting a massive vaccination program with an incompletely characterized experimental vaccine. Now, we've talked about a few points around this. We've already talked about how the Pfizer documentation itself makes very clear that there's multiple ingredients within this injection that have yet to be even verified or proven safe, that they have up until 2022 or 2023, depending on which one, or I think it was 2022 in regard to the one I remember. And these were in more than just Pfizer, by the way. So there's a bunch of different dates. Even the safety trials themselves vary from 2022 to 2023 for their end date, even though they pretend it's all passed. The point is there's multiple ingredients that have yet to even, and the only reason that's allowed is because of the emergency use. And if you really remember what that means, as we've gone through in the past, I recommend you look at the part where I talked about understanding what that means. It's clearly something that's done in what they claim is an emergency, and it's done at risk. That's the point, that we ignore risk because we argue the situation is more risky. So they'll tell you that on one side of their mouth, but then on the other side of it, argue that, well, this is just normal process. It's not any more safe. We've proven it's safe and effective, but it's only because, well, that doesn't make any sense. If it was safe and effective, it would be approved. It's not, though, because those ingredients haven't even been looked at yet, because they're still getting information back to them, because the inserts are still blank, because on and on and on, you're being lied to. Now, it says regulatory documents revealed Pfizer didn't thoroughly examine biodistribution and pharmacokinetics. We just talked about this, about how your body interacts with the drugs, biodistribution, about where it goes in your body. Doesn't that seem relevant right now? This lie they keep telling you about how it stays in the injection site, even though the science around it has proven that's not true, and they just ignore that science, but trust the science, right? It says that they didn't thoroughly examine biodistribution and pharmacokinetics, the issues relating to its vaccine before submitting the vaccine to the European Medicines Agency for review. So they didn't do what they were supposed to do before issuing it for review. Okay, now if this was an honest process, well, what would have happened? Well, the EMA would have been like, well, hey, you didn't do what you're supposed to do, so go do that. But you see, this isn't an honest process. It says, in fact, in key studies called biodistribution studies, which are designed to test where an injected compound travels in the body and which tissues or organs it accumulates in, Pfizer did not use, this is really important, they did not use the commercial vaccine, the BNT162b2, but instead relied on a surrogate mRNA that produced the luciferase protein. Now, remember what this is all about. This is the protein for the luminescence that's used to track and you know, basically be able to tell where it goes inside your body in a similar way they use the radioactivity, right? Now, what's interesting here is that their big thing was that this luciferase is not involved with any humans. It's the in regard to the ant, whatever. Well, that's obviously not true because we're talking about human trials here. And you'll note in both these things, it talks about that. Now, that name in and of itself always I thought was really ridiculous. But when you really think about it, and it still is, especially with the timing of it all and how it all works, and the fact that in the documentation, and I'm not even joking, it was like 6.66 milliliters, which is ridiculous, almost like it's meant to make you look at it. But luciferase ultimately, you know, translates into, based on, you know, light or whatever in regard to illuminescence. But that's a different discussion. I've talked about how weird that is in the past. But the point is, one, that that's in there, even though they pretend that that wasn't being used, but the idea that they didn't use the one that's currently being used in people's bodies. Does that remind you of anything? It should. It should remind you of the swine flu discussion that I play all the time, where they admit, they ask Dr. What's his name? I don't want to play the whole clip right now. I'm trying to remember his name. Anyway, where they talk about the clip, they discuss it, or they talk about the injections, and they talk about it, and he asks them, and it turns out they swapped them out. They swapped it out at the last minute after they safety tested, or so we're told, on one style, and then swapped it out at the end for something else. And that's people got Guillain-Barré syndrome and narcolepsy and all sorts of terrible things. Neurological problems. So here we are staring at the information. And again, this is backed up in the documentation that Pfizer did not use the commercial vaccine for this testing, but instead a surrogate mRNA produced produced the luciferase protein. Now, bottom line is, they don't know then what the one that's currently being used, they don't know how it actually distributes around the body, which doesn't that seem telling, seeing as how we're finding out that it doesn't stay in the location? So clearly, this was either a way to hide that fact, or they're just incompetent. I do not believe it's the latter. I think this was an intentional move, just like it was before. Now, what this brings to mind, though, remember we just talked about this BNT162b2 discussion about how we realized that this exact iteration of this technology was the one that is being discussed as a self-amplifying injection. This is the document right here. This is from the study we already recently talked about. Pfizer Biotech, self-replicating RNA. Now, what's interesting is that's not what it was discussed in the beginning. Now, here's what I'm posing as a possibility. Is it not possible that this injection, or the B21 version of it, which you can see here, this is the discussion, one of which you could find a lot of different places. BNT162b2 is a nucleoside modified, which I keep telling you, by the way, no one talks about this properly. Mod RNA, that's what it is. It's modified RNA, not mRNA. They're different. It's modified RNA. So it's genetically engineered like every other part of this. Seemingly, they're just making literally every part of this from scratch and pretending like that's all for your safety while we're experimenting on you with it all. But it's saying they use that modified RNA candidate that encodes an optimized SARS-CoV-2 full-length spike glycoprotein antigen. This is the spike protein. Now, it has received the FDA's fast-track designation, which is interesting, by the way. Remember that. We're going to get into a part about the Alzheimer's drug where they talk about the fast track, which is clearly a way to sidestep what they need to do, which we're finding all across the board, and FDA's complicit in all of it. But fast track to emergency authorization, that doesn't seem to make sense, does it? But it says, which means, and this is back, this is, where was the date here? Frustrating. Anyway. That's strange. I thought I saw it earlier. Anyway, continuing forward. Oh, right here, November 18th, 2020. So the point is that, you know, this is when they're saying they're fast tracking this for designation, even though it ended up being authorized in November. And anyway, it just seems like an odd point. But it says, as has the other advanced construct under study, BNT162b1. Another nucleoside mod RNA candidate, which encodes an optimized SARS-CoV-2 receptor binding antigen. So there's two different kinds that were both being used in fast track. Now it says Pfizer and BioNTech have studied both of them. We'll just say B2 and B1, and two other constructs of BNT162. Right, so that's the main thing, and there's B2 and B1, but they're just using this as a base model. And this is my point about the platform and everything else. And it says a uridine containing. Which uridine is, I don't know why that won't work. Uridine, a glycosylated pyrimidine analog containing, nothing stands out necessarily. Anyway, but it says containing mRNA. So they're calling that a uRNA. Remember that for the future. Uridine containing mRNA. And a candidate using, guess what, self-amplifying mRNA. So the interesting part is, could that be something that was swapped out, and that's why this one is now self-amplifying? Or is that the candidate we're talking about? I mean, this is an interesting thing to see as we're going forward. So they're telling you here that they swapped this out for a surrogate mRNA that produced this luciferase protein. So just remember that, as we could be talking about literally one of the other ones that they swapped out without telling you, which they've literally done before. And that's why we're seeing these things self-amplify. which remember simply means that it continues to produce the instructions to make the spike protein over and over exponentially, according to the documents we've read, as well as the fact that the early on discussion of the self-amplifying RNA, it clearly says it leads to an exponential growth to Darwinian evolution. That's literally what it says in the scientific documentation. So it's alarming to me. But going forward, it says, according to Trial Site News, the EMA reviewers shared this explicit admission, quote, no traditional pharmacokinetic or biodistribution studies have been performed with the vaccine candidate BNT162b2. That you realize how shocking that statement is? That's the one that is right now being injected in 12-year-olds' arms, right now being injected in pregnant women, right now being injected in people all around the world and the country. And they're telling you, no traditional biodistribution studies have even been performed on this. Great. So we don't know where it goes, and that's why it's ending up in your blood, and I believe they're hiding that from us. Pharmacokinetics refers to the study of what the body does with the drug and the drug's movement throughout the body, the time course of its absorption, bioavailability, distribution, metabolism. Yeah, all these really unimportant things, right? Regulatory documents also show Pfizer did not follow industry standard quality management practices during preclinical toxicity studies of its vaccine, as key studies did not meet good laboratory practice. GLP, very relevant. These were non-GLP studies, which is what they call them. So they did not meet good laboratory practice. Good laboratory practice is a set of principles, it says, intended to assure the quality and integrity of non-clinical laboratory studies used as the basis for research or marketing permits for products regulated by government agencies, most commonly with pharmaceutical stuff. It says, quote, the implications of these findings are that Pfizer was trying to accelerate the vaccine development timeline based on the pressures of the pandemic. This is according to their CEO, Trial Site founder and CEO, excuse me, saying that this is exactly what any honest person would have seen coming a mile away. You're giving a company a profit motive to be first, to rush, to get past everybody. And then you're even giving them the allowance to rush. You're saying, good, do it fast. We're in an emergency. We'll give you a pass. We'll give you indemnity. Of course, this is what happens. They accelerated the process because of the fact that they wanted to win, or the fact that this was always the plan. Who ultimately knows? It's an obvious direction. It says the challenge is that the processes, such as good laboratory practices, are of paramount importance, shocking, for quality and ultimately for patient safety, right? The very thing they tell you is of the utmost importance, even though they skip all the things needed for safety, for your safety. That's their actual argument. If such important steps are skipped, the risk-benefit analysis would need to be compelling. Now, remember, this is the idea that these are okay risks because the coronavirus is so much more dangerous, except that's easily shown to be false using their own information. That's what's so ridiculous. O'Connor pointed to the example of generic repurposed drugs that, when under evaluation, even if they are approved, must go through, quote, even more studies to prove their worth. Yet in the case of this Pfizer injection, this unapproved, experimental, brand new technology that's failed repeatedly until now, they must go through, he says that, quote, Pfizer was given more discretion, even with a radically new life science-based technology. More discretion than things that we know from the past that have shown previous work, but just because they're a new drug for something, let's say that they've done, tried, the science have done, the technology they've done, the kind of drug they've done, but even then, they prove it and then still keep testing it. And that's not, with something of this experimental, that's never been successfully done. And they're going, yeah, just skip all that. Just get it out there and put it in people's arms. It's like we're trying to create an extinction event. According to Trial Site News, it's standard practice for the EMA to disclose its assessment of investigational new drug submissions. But guess what? Shocking. I know you're not going to believe this. In the case of Pfizer's vaccine, the EMA assessment included a summary of the agent's evaluation of the non-clinical vaccine distribution studies reported to the EMA by Pfizer, but the EMA did not disclose the results of Pfizer's biodistribution studies in the public EMA summary. Do you want to know why I think that is? I think it's a painfully obvious thing, because they knew they didn't do it properly. So you know what they did? Because they're looking out for you, they hid that from you. The EMA, the FDA, groups whose literal job, as they claim, is to keep you safe from companies like this. And they just hide the information. They just didn't disclose the fact that they didn't do proper studies. They didn't follow the practices correctly. and they swapped out a vaccine for a different one at the last minute, so you didn't even find out that one with the limited stuff they did do. You don't need more than this to recognize the whole thing's broken. They don't care about you. Whether the company, the government, or the regulatory agencies, I guess it's still the government. Studies submitted to the EMA were carried out using two methods. Use of mRNA that produces the luciferase protein and use of radioactive label to mark the mRNA. Now recognize this is clear that this is being used on people in studies. The studies revealed the majority of radioactivity initially remained near the ejection site. But within hours, a subset of the stabilized mRNA-containing particles became widely distributed throughout the bodies of test animals. Oh, well, excuse me. I guess it's still saying animals. But as you walk through this process, it's pretty clear to me based on the other documentation that this was used in human trials. That's my opinion. The way that they're discussing this, I think it's pretty much impossible that it wasn't. But come to your own conclusions. But going forward, oh, wait, and this is the important part. So I did have some stuff I wanted to rattle off before we keep going forward. First, I talked about a lot of this stuff in this recent discussion, and you'll find that right here is where a lot of this stuff is. Where was it? Right here. I go over, this is the section in particular where I discussed the self-amplifying Pfizer discussion, which this is just, I don't know why no one's talking about this but me, but it's incredible. But there's all, where was it? Maybe I'll keep reading. There's a couple of these reproductivity parts. I feel like what I had planned was to go, certain parts pop out in the article and I'll jump over and read one of those. But I think I already passed where I was going to do that. But let's just read through this and jump back over, you know, on our toes. But it says, additionally, the EMA document states, quote, biodistribution, several literature reports indicate that lipid nanoparticle formulated RNAs can distribute rather non-specifically to several organs, such as, shocking, the spleen, the heart, the kidney, the lung, and the brain. You know, all those non-important things. In line with this, results from the newly transmitted study, 185350, indicate a broader distribution pattern. Now, that was one of the things. We've already shown you this discussion or this document. This is coming. This is a Pfizer study that I believe is now out, but it was leaked at the beginning in regard to, guess what? Pharmacokinetics. And it shows you. And this was here. Let me do this really quickly so I don't lose this spot. Maybe there wasn't a date on here. I know this is brand new just because it was leaked out and we just went over it in a past show. In any case, the point was what it finds in their finally done information here is that in the ovaries specifically, the lipid nanoparticles build up incredibly. The spleen being the worst. The spleen is unbelievable. And so this is real-time scientific documentation from Pfizer that shows you that there's an issue. That shows you, and this is considering that polyethylene glycol lipid nanoparticles are dangerous to people, that the nanoparticles themselves, without any of this stuff, again, this is a lipid, but that's the same point. The nanoparticle, we're talking about this can clearly build up in the reproductive organs, can cause inflammation in the body. I mean, this is their own science is showing this stuff, and they don't care. No one's been told about this. There's no informed consent about what these nanoparticles can do in your body. Wild. Now it says, the EMA observation corresponds with a growing number of adverse events and aligns with data trial site obtained through Freedom of Information Acts showing concentration of lipid nanoparticle formulated RNAs in the spleen, ovaries, and tissues and organs. Dr. Robert, this is the guy we're about to read next, Dr. Robert W. Malone, the original inventor of mRNA, when asked to review the comment on the EMA assessment, Malone noted normal pharmacokinetic and pharmacotoxicology studies had not been performed before the emergency use authorization for the product, meaning that both the United States government and the European governments allowed an emergency authorization for this product, despite the fact that they hadn't done the most basic things that were needed to prove that this doesn't just flood throughout your body. How is that possible? unless they don't care about your safety, unless there's another agenda at play here. Quote, he says, it says, quote, I was particularly surprised that the dossier of regulatory documents indicates allowance for use in humans based on a non-GLP, meaning they're not using the right practices, and toxicology studies relying on formulations which are significantly different from the final vaccine. Realize what he just said. They're relying, and this is the same point, relying on formulations which are not even the same thing that are being put in people's arms, but they point to that formulation and say, well, see, it does something we want to you to think, it, you know, whatever. This works this well, and then we're going to give you something different and pretend like that still makes sense, even though your governments know that's happening. You're being experimented on. The evidence is through the roof. This is a doctor pointing this out. And one of the people, okay, we just talked about the, what's his name? Warren Luigi, or I forget his first name. This is one of the original inventors of mRNA as well. Somebody who you can't just pretend is an anti-science fringe conspiracy theorist who's telling you he looked at the documentation and they didn't do this what they were supposed to. They switched things out. They studied the wrong thing. They're lying to you. It says, after completing a review, trial site's other source noted the following, quote, a quick review of toxicology section 2.3.3 of the European Medicines Agency assessment report on COVID-19 mRNA vaccine, the Comirnaty with Pfizer again, and this is just the main name, issued on February 19th, raises concerns about data applicability of preclinical study findings to clinical use. So they're calling out the fact that the data they have from those so-called studies are not applicable to being used in the real world. It says, quote, to determine the biodistribution of the lipid nanoparticle formulated modified mRNA, the applicant did study distribution of the mod RNA in two different non-GLP studies in mice and rats and determined the biodistribution of a surrogate luciferase mod RNA. It says, thus, one might question the validity and applicability of the non-GLP studies conducted using a variant of the subject mRNA vaccine. Obviously. In addition, no genotoxicity data were provided to the EMA. Are you kidding me? The European European Medicines Agency didn't get genotoxicity data, yet said it was okay to use in people? Guys, this is just unbelievable. Not really. In fact, it's completely believable. It's just shocking that this is happening so obviously, and yet things go forward. They broke the rules. They're lying to you. They're using things they didn't test. They're cutting corners. They're skipping things. They have used things right now that they haven't even fully tested out yet. And meanwhile, your governments and the media are screaming that that's all fake news while it's right in front of you. It's right there for you to look at. And here's the main point with all the links. You can read it for yourself. It's pretty hard to ignore. Now, it can't hurt to point out yet again that here is the Pfizer tracker for crimes, violations of their being dishonest. And of course, the main ones that really matter are understanding that Pfizer, and this is just since the year 2000, $4.6 billion, 71 different times they've been caught for crimes. Health-related offenses, $3.3 billion, 10 different times. Government contracting-related offenses, $1.1 billion. Safety-related offenses, 11 different times, $100 million. The obvious important ones are things like, I don't know, False Claims Act, right? Lying, off-label, unapproved promotion of medical products, right? Lying about safety, lying about side effects of drugs, all of this. And this is the company we're trusting at face value. And even though they didn't even provide the data to the EMA, and yet we're trusting them. Your 12-year-old is trusting them. Your pregnant wife is trusting them. Because that makes sense. A company that's been caught lying about literally exactly what we're talking about multiple times. Now, remember, this is the other study that's important. This is directly from the EMA. This is from Europa.eu. I've pointed this out before, but this one's specifically about Moderna. But of course, it shows you, as we pointed out many times, it says the mRNA 1273 was associated with non-adverse effects, including thin fur, cover, swollen hind limbs, limited use of the hind limb, totally not real important, right? But that's the mini, that's the minuscule stuff. It says there were, but what's weird is it says there were no effects on fertility. And it goes on to say, first of all, that the related non-adverse effects were limited to an increase in the number of fetuses with common skeletal variations. So like literally genetic alterations, or one or more rib nodules, or one or more wavy ribs with no effect on. So they have different body structures. Their skeletal makeup is different based on the fact they were injected with a genetically modifying injection, but no big deal. Totally not common differences, but that's also not the most important part. It says, most importantly, the overall pregnancy index was numerically lower in the rats that got the injection, 84%, compared to the control animals, which means they didn't get the injection, of 93%. Almost a 10% decrease in fertility because they got the injection. And that's not enough. You know why? Because they say, well, it didn't go below 75%, so we count that as not relevant. Not relevant? 10%, don't you think women would want to know that they're going to have a 10% decrease? You don't realize how many, I mean, that literally is what we've discussed in regard to, like, talking about things like using contraception and vaccines to get that population down by you know, so many percent. That this is exactly what it would do. Shave 10% off for everyone that gets this in regard to future generations. Now, I'm not saying that's intentional. You could think about it however you wish. But the point is to not know that you're getting a 10% reduction in fertility by using this injection is a crime. Absolute. Blows me away. I've reported on this many times. Also recognize that they're currently doing a trial about how this affects the ovaries. But we'll just wait until we figure that out to stop giving it to women. It finishes in February 2022. Meanwhile, we'll keep injecting pregnant women or just women in general. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen, but we'll just keep doing it because you're all in danger from something that's less than the flu, especially if you're under 50. Remember, under 25, according to the meta-analysis of 134 different studies on the infection fatality rate of COVID, showed you that if you're 25 or lower, you've got a 0.01% risk. 0.01%. It's ridiculous. Children, 0.0002%. But, you know, we're all in danger, right? Well, how about those women that are 24-year-old women that are being told you have to take this because you have a job and blah, 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 blah. But we're going to test now to see if it takes away your fertility or can reduce it. Also, don't forget that this is very clearly finding its way into your blood, just like the discussion is here. When we're talking about the idea they skipped all of this stuff. Now, remember, the point is when they skip these things, just like RFK Jr. said in the beginning clip, that's when they either missed something or skipped it so it wouldn't be found. Remember what he said is every time they did these animal trials, these different studies, that's when they found this out. And we're talking about animal trials in this article. So when they skipped this stuff and didn't do it properly, well, guess what they missed? All the things we're seeing now and all the things they found when they did the animal trials in the previous times. Maybe it's because they knew what they'd find and they wanted to get it out regardless. Certainly a thought. But recognize how obviously crazy that is, that they're telling you that this is finding its way into your blood, that it's circulating, and this is what they would have been able to show. Because remember, we're talking about biodistribution. So did they choose not to see what they knew would happen? Maybe there's a reason it's supposed to happen. But here is science from Oxford Academic telling you detected in the blood of people who got injected. 11 of 13 people show detectable levels of the protein in their blood as early as one day. Hours after this injection, guys. And this isn't debatable. They found it. There's proteins, spike proteins, circulating your blood after you get this within the first day. Now, remember, the science we're talking about here has showed quite clearly that the spike protein in your blood or in your body anywhere, with or without the injection, can cause disease. Not just illness, but disease. And blood clots and strokes and all sorts of other things. This has very clearly been shown. They're just not telling you that on the mainstream media. Because they have lost the plot. They're saying trust the science while they're actively sweeping science under the rug. It's pretty embarrassing. Here's another interesting point. This is an old thing from 1995, but remember, I think it was 1990 when they discovered mRNA. In fact, they discovered first the self-amplifying mRNA, which is an important note. But here's what this says under a polypoprotein B mRNA editing protein induces heptocellular carcinoma and dysplasia in transgenic animals. It says, unexpectedly, all of the transgenic mice and a transgenic rabbit had liver dysplasia. This is after using mRNA editing enzymes in their body. It says, and many transgenic mice developed hepatocellular carcinomas. Many of the mouse livers were hyperplastic and filled with lipid. Interesting. Other hepatic mRNAs with sequence motifs similar to ApoB mRNA, that's the version they're using in this study, were examined for this type of editing. Now, it says one of these, thyrosine kinase, was edited in livers of transgenic mice, but not of controls. This result demonstrates that other mRNAs can be edited by the overexpressed editing enzyme and suggests that apparent editing of hepatic mRNAs involved in cell growth and regulation is the cause of the tumorigenesis. So it's causing the problem. It's causing the growth of tumors and different things in their body. Now, what's interesting is the main sentence there. They're telling you that this result demonstrates that other mRNAs generally can be edited by the overexpressed editing enzyme. So this is, let's hypothetically say, comparing it to the current one, they're injecting you with this mod RNA with their different instructions. And they're saying that this shows that other mRNAs, the messenger RNAs in your body, can be edited by the overexpressing of that spike protein, which we know, we just proved to you, is happening. They're producing more, that it's going through your bloodstream. And so they're telling you that it can edit other mRNAs in your body. This sounds like a never-ending process that just keeps getting worse. Now, does this prove that this study translates to that? No, because this is my point always. This could be wrong. They could have done something. They could have wrong information. It just adds to the big picture. Here is another scientific study that says in their findings that mRNA in general, specifically the mod messenger RNA they're using, can be overexpressed and edit other messenger RNAs in your body. These are all the kind of things that we're concerned about that they're just skipping right over, even though the science from the past, scientific studies have shown that that is the case. Pretty telling. Now, all of that aside, all the risks and the fact that the documentation itself shows that they skipped the testing, didn't do the right safety, didn't do what they were supposed to. All of the mainstream is happy just to go, if you think differently, then you're wrong and trust the vaccine, trust in the government. not even kidding. Like it's a religion. Here's an article from Medscape, the five C's, how to target COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy, right? So it doesn't matter whether or not you're justified, whether or not Pfizer has been shown to be skipping what they need, just swapping things out. There's ingredients in this very injection that have yet to even be proven out, that there's all sorts of reasons that we should be concerned. But this guy's going to tell you how to confront people that just don't want it. Counseling the vaccine hesitant on the benefits of COVID-19 immunization can at times be uncomfortable or even combative. Counseling on the benefits of this, right? So there's no argument. There's not even the possible room in this discussion for somebody to say, well, aren't there concerns? No. You're crazy. You're a crazy anti-science weirdo unless you take this with blind faith. We all see that. And it's absolutely alarming. And that even this is why even people that might have otherwise taken it are like, who have a little bit of discernment are kind of going, that's strange. Like, why? There's obviously things we should be. I mean, look at blood clots and anaphylaxis, and they're going, if you think that, you're a crazy madman. It's all extremely rare. Everything's extremely rare. That whole entire discussion's extremely rare. We said 1,000 times. Experts in the UK propose clinicians and public health officials to keep the five C's in mind to increase the likelihood of fruitful discussion. Now, doesn't it sound like the most ridiculous opposite in the world? I mean, even the MIT study found quite clearly that people on this sort of argument, on our side of this argument, are willing to hear other sides, are willing to look at new information and bring that into our mindset. But people on the side of trust the government, vaccine's good at all costs, will plug their ears and stomp their feet and run away going, you're an idiot, you're fake news. And we're the ones that are supposed to be, like, this is the interesting part. I'm willing to bet you my life that Damian McNamara would completely laugh in your face if you said, here's a scientific study that shows that masks don't have statistically significant reduction against transmission. Here it is in my hand. And he'd be like, come on. We know it's such fake news. That was debunked or whatever. Because they don't have fruitful discussion. Now, are there people on our side, whatever that means, that would do the same? Of course there are. But it's funny to me that by and large, the people that are ignoring all the science that proves this is not as cut and dry as it looks are the very people that are being told they have to be patient and work with them to walk us into the reality as all they're saying is trust the government. Right? Didn't you know you're hurting your grandma? Like, that's all they can say. Even with an estimated 52% of American adults now fully vaccinated. False. I mean, here a guy is trying to walk us into things with truth, with like a patient mindset. Just coax them into the reality. We have to just trust our facts. Okay. Except you're ridiculously and stupidly wrong, guy. It's 42.3%. And I keep pointing this out. What's funny is he's quoting from Joe Biden. He just said 51% just the other day, right? This is a new article. It's from today. Ah, oh, son of a gun. Well, it doesn't even matter. This is such a waste of time. But the point is, he's saying 52%. So does McNamara believe that, or is he part of the effort to completely deceive you? Because it's clearly not. They are desperate to keep you thinking the majority's already there. They're not. How can it possibly be that we are all the complete conspiracy theorist anti-vaxxers, the minority putting everybody at risk, when we're clearly the 60% is the majority, guys? If 60% of this country is saying we don't want this, if 60% of nurses have already said we don't want this, and that's exactly why they quietly stopped talking about how they're all heroes, because that's how hypocritical and ridiculous these mainstream morons are. Like, seriously, like, think about how insulting that is to be, every one of them are heroes, and how dare you talk about them? And suddenly they go, we don't want that thing, and they just move on. In fact, not only move on, attack them themselves, as we've seen on the mainstream already, going after nurses who refuse this thing. Aren't they all heroes? What happened? It's pathetic. 42%. So he's wrong. He's lying to you, or he's wrong. But of course, that they've done million-dollar lotteries and giveaways and God knows what else. Yeah, free beer, because we know how much that makes sense to take an injection with beer. If you look up flu injections in beer, they'll say, no, 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 don't do that. That's dangerous. But here, take this new genetically altering experimental unapproved thing with beer, because get it no matter what, right? Because good no matter what is good. Quote, the take-home message for discussing vaccination and engaging with patients is to conduct an open, honest, non-judgmental manner. Yeah, take your own advice, guys. I'd love to sit down with any one of you and walk and spoon-feed you all the things you think aren't there. Reality, though, going forward, I'm going to skip the rest of it because it's pathetic. Confidence, right? And this is the one last point. It says very clearly, people believing in safety, efficacy, and importance of vaccines is crucial. That's it. That's the statement. So not trusting the data around them, not taking the time to understand the data so then you can trust that it's safe. No. Just believing in the safety. This is gospel, guys. This is religion. If it's about believing, it's not factual. It's not science. You're believing that it's safe because they tell you it is. Even they'll say that, but we got to just make sure you believe that this is safe. There's been there are so many examples of things we're told were safe by authority who said, trust the science. And then it turned out to be not safe. I could go over 100 examples. Complacency. You got to make sure people don't just get like this, define vaccine hesitancy as a delay in acceptance to get this thing, right? Not hesitancy is not because you're concerned about things. It's just because you just want to delay and don't care and you're lazy. So stupid. It is also stupid. Convenience, communication, and context. All the things that we're actively showing are ridiculous. But okay, last point, just because it's funny. It says convenience. Okay. So the whole point of this article is to say, how do you as an individual deal with vaccine hesitancy, right? How do you deal with your friend that doesn't want to get injected? That's the whole point of the article. Not how does the world or how do the doctors or how did the government deal with it, but how do you? Counseling that's you. And that's what the article is about. Okay. So convenience. How does the average person create convenience for your neighbor? Okay. It says if you offer vaccines in a convenient way, well, they will come. That's the gist of the third C, providing immunizations in an easy to reach location. Okay. So Roz is arguing that you as your neighbor, as your individual, apparently go out and create a vaccine platform for people to take, right? God, he's so stupid. Like, how do you convenience? He's applying this as a broad sense that we need to give them the convenience. But how does that work in the context of your article? How did these five things help me to create convenience, to make a vaccine center? You get the point. It's just broken. Everything about what they're doing is pandering painfully. It's it makes my skin crawl. It's like reading a badly written spy novel that's just completely using old, tired analogies and cliches. And it's just like, God, I can't even read this anymore. That's what all of this feels like. It's just, they're just painfully walking through the motions. And half of them actually believe this stuff. But don't forget, as he continues to go through the information, that yes, this was completely confirmed. That was a point that I had highlighted that I guess I skipped. He goes over in this thing. Oh, I mean, I might as well show you since I said that. Let's see.
This one?
Yeah, okay. It was right there in the beginning. But he says, okay, oh, that's right. So just believing in safety is crucial. But then it says, recent attention to the rare but serious blood clot events potentially associated. This is as of today, you understand. So are we really pretending that Dr. McNamara here is not, oh, that's the different guy, or Raza, Dr. Raza, that they're unaware that this has been unequivocally shown to be the case, that now they're all reporting, because these people are still being taken by the narrative. Just the Twitter narrative, right? That just, we all collectively know that it hasn't been proven. It hasn't been proven. Our government has admitted it's been proven. They've talked about vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, VITT. They've admitted to this. Multiple places have. In fact, it's already been shown that Pfizer and plenty of others have the exact same effect based on the spike protein, but all I can say is potentially associated, because he knows his marching orders. Here, as always, is Norway telling you, way back when on March, in March, what was it, March 18th, has been confirmed. But you know this already because you watched this show. This is the problem about trusting experts or trusting people that you, or anybody really for that matter, but doctors can be wrong, guys. Doctors can be swayed by authority because that's what they're taught to do in school today, aggressively. One quick point on this that I just thought was humorous. Someone just shared this with me. Same kind of point. And it's only because this is exactly why Alex here censored or blocked me, because I called out this same point, or I literally just asked him. But somebody asked him about cannabis in this regard. Now, this is really telling about not just Alex, but about how people still can't get past their reverence for authority, even as they point out how those same people are lying to us. Somebody asks, Dylan says, I wish somebody would ask Alex, this is Alex Bernanson, if he thinks COVID or weed are more dangerous, is more dangerous. Right? Okay. I think that's a pretty obvious example. I mean, come on, guys. A child today knows how just... cannabis is not dangerous. Anything could be dangerous. Anything can be, in moderation, guys. Everything in moderation. That's the point. But you can't smoke enough cannabis to hurt, to kill you, right? The old joke is that it only kills you if a pound of it falls in your head. Not a single person has ever been shown to die just from cannabis, maybe driving on it and getting a car crash. But these are all old concepts that I've beaten to death on this show. The fact that so many things like schizophrenia, the things he references right on this little point, are shown to be catastrophically false based on expert opinion and everything else I've proven. But I don't want to get pulled into this. I'm very passionate about the cannabis topic. But here's what he says in regard to literally being asked whether COVID or weed is more dangerous. Now, understand, guys, this is under the way that Alex perceives this, because he's adamant about the fact that COVID is there, that it's a dangerous thing, whatever. But yet all the narrative around it is false, right? So whatever. He maybe believes that. It's up to you to decide. The point is, he believes it is. So he said that before. And here he is saying, it depends on how old you are. 25 and under, no comorbidities. Cannabis is significantly more dangerous. And not only psychiatrically. I mean, what kills me is that the idea that this is even psyche, it's like that it doesn't, that the fact that cannabis, in fact, has negative effects on your brain instead of the opposite. Or the fact that this is hurting your body in any way, shape, or form. Now, again, I'm talking about in like somebody who smokes every day, constantly, nonstop, all day long. Well, anything like that would be negative for your body eventually. You know what would be way, way, way worse? Alcohol, tobacco, any number of things that we use on a regular basis. Injections. But he's telling you that if you are 25 and under, healthy, no comorbidities, that somehow cannabis is way more dangerous. How does that even make sense? I guess the idea is that because, I get it. The point being that 25, that you're not at risk to COVID. But the argument is somehow that cannabis is dangerous there. But he goes on to say cannabis hypermesis syndrome, cannabis associated myocarditis, cannabis associated myocarditis infraction. Guys, Think about how ridiculous it is that we're talking about somebody right now who is pointing out things like the fact that they're trying to pass off myocarditis to long haul COVID or COVID-19 itself. Meanwhile, we're proving that the injection's causing that. So do you not realize right in this moment that we're talking about the same people who were watching miscategorize something in regard to literally myocarditis, and yet we can't stop and go, wait a minute, could they have done that with cannabis too? I mean, look, we don't know. But how about we don't just state it as fact when we know that this lie from one of the most monumental lies in history, the lie about reefer madness and the way it's all come down from our government, is possibly still in regard to this? I mean, come on, Alex. Just recognize that the same people are behind the same push that you're currently calling out. You don't need to defend it because you wrote a book about it. Recognize that we're all evolving in our understanding. He goes on to say, and of course, psychosis itself is physically dangerous because it sharply increases the risk of homicide and suicide. The idea that cannabis myocarditis is inflammation of the heart. Do you realize cannabis in and of itself is anti-inflammatory. This just shows a fundamental misunderstanding of everything about cannabis and what it actually does to your body, and how, in fact, it has so many ways of, in fact, specifically THC and cannabidiol have a way of literally working with your body that nothing else can to create what's called the entourage effect, which is wildly beneficial for you. More than anything you could point. I mean, I can go so off on this, but nonetheless, the real point is how even people like this, that, by the way, is doing absolutely fantastic work on COVID-19, I believe that. Alex is pointing out things left and right, or at least was when I wasn't blocked, about things that I find to be very important. But yet he has just dug in on something that even his own followers are going, come on, man. It's so past the point to pretend that cannabis is what they said it was. And we are so stuck, even people that see the illusion, on things we think we know, on things. And look, I'm willing to consider that I'm wrong on this, as I am with everything. That's just how I've driven this into my brain. But the reality is, the information around it all, especially coming from the very people that are lying to us about everything else, is suspect. That's why you need to look at things like independent studies, like we're both doing, Alex and I, in regard to currently COVID-19, not FDA statements. You want to see, like I said before, you want to look about statements about kratom, let's say. I'm sure if he believes the same things about cannabis, he'll probably say kratom causes liver damage and blah, blah, blah. Why? Because the FDA lied about that. And said, oh, it killed people. Well, no, that was a shotgun to the chest Ben Swan pointed out. Anyway, you get the point. Clearly, this is a passionate topic for me. We need to be careful about things we think we know, question everything, and not have an over-reliance on authority in any situation. Because things like this can happen. I mean, literally talking about the same conversation. Here, Biden, and I'll show you, this is from the Washington Post. I'm just using this so you can see it. Biden's nonsensical claim about Alzheimer's and hospital beds. Apparently, Biden said, if we don't do something about Alzheimer's in America, every single solitary hospital bed that exists in America, as the nurses can tell you, every single one will be occupied in the next 15 years with an Alzheimer's patient. Everyone. Why? Because of what they're doing to us. It's not a secret. This stuff doesn't just randomly start happening. It's because of the aluminum in the air, because of what they're spraying in the air. Patrick Roddy, who I still would love, I don't know whatever happened to him. He used to run StopSprayingUs.com. He would take samples of the rainwater in San Francisco like every week. This is long before they admitted they were doing this, and they have admitted it now. They admit to spraying aluminum and barium in the sky to stop climate change or whatever their narrative is. But he did this long before that and found that there was wildly high levels, way past the safety levels, in the rainwater. You know what causes Alzheimer's, or what they find in the brain of Alzheimer's patients? Aluminum. That's a huge problem in the UK. But we don't care about that, right? It's all about treatment. It's all about, Band-Aid on a bullet hole, right? Just keep patching it up and making money. And the point is that he says this, and then Washington Post goes, well, Biden's nonsensical claims about Alzheimer's and hospital beds. But the point was that he stated it, and even the Washington Post was kind of like, well, that was strange, but guess what happened right away? Well, first, let me just, so you can see that it is the Washington Post. So this was on the 3rd, I believe. I just had that up. It was the 3rd. Yeah, June 3rd. On the 6th or the 7th, I believe this came out yesterday or today, FDA approves much-debated Alzheimer's drug, panned by experts. Days later, they approved something for this, even though they haven't done it in like 20 years. So did Biden know this would happen? Which seems a little bit strange, right? If the president is aware of what, I mean, regardless, it shows you that this is an odd connective push in regard to new experimental drugs during a time when they're seemingly allowing everything to fly by the seat of their pants, like not really investigating, not, you know, I mean, and this just speaks to exactly that. So guess what happened? Government health officials on Monday approved the first new drug for Alzheimer's disease in nearly 20 years, disregarding, in fact, ignoring warnings from independent advisors that the much debated treatment hasn't been shown to help slow the brain destroying disease. It's not a joke, guys. So they approve something in the middle of whatever they tell us, the worst pandemic and blah, 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 that their own experts are like, it doesn't even work. So they can't give you something like vitamin D or any number of the other drugs that everybody wants to talk about, which I don't support any of them, but you should have the right to do any number of them. They can't approve any of those. They can't even emergency authorize them, even though they all have proven track records and they're jamming in all these experimental things left and right and using, bringing more of them to the table right now, all over the place. And they can't. And yet here they're just rushing through an approved thing that doesn't even work. Does that not show you how arbitrary this process is and how clearly broken and seized it is by these outside, by companies? This is what you call a captured agency. Now, it says a new drug, which Biogen, the company, and you can see right here, I believe, here's the actual page for it. You can read through it. Which Biogen developed with Japan's ESI company, did not reverse mental decline, only slowing it in one study. So you realize that we have, so, and you'll find out as I read this, that they did multiple studies, which failed and failed and failed. They got one they liked, kind of, and they said, do it, approve it, go. Why? Because clearly there's an agenda here. Money behind it, powerful people pushing it, who knows? But the point is that we're talking about something that has such an obvious relevance to today. Think about all the studies we've shown you that clearly, random controlled trials, peer-reviewed science, that clearly shows you that these things are not what they say they are. And they ignore it. And just wait for a model that says this works. And they go, okay, there it is. So they're just, it's cherry picking, exactly what they tried to accuse us of. Just continuing to roll the dice until they get something that kind of looks the way they want it. And they say, that's the good one. That's the right one. It's really this juvenile. I mean, we have to see this. Now it says the medication. I forget. I looked this up a second ago. Hold on. Maybe I think it was right in here. It doesn't really matter. It's right there. Aducanumab. What is that about? That's how you pronounce this. Aducanumab or something like that. Whatever. What should we call it? Aducanumab. Such a strange name. So this medication, Aducan, will be marketed as Aduhelm and is to be given as an infusion every 4 weeks. Dr. Caleb Alexander, an FDA advisor who recommended against the drug's approval, said he was surprised and disappointed. So even somebody in the FDA advisory committee or group, including their panel of experts, said that it doesn't work. And then they were disappointed and surprised. Think about how much this shows everything that's wrong with what's going on. Quote, the FDA gets the respect that it does because, which by the way, it doesn't exist right now, but he's saying in his mind, they get the respect that they have left because it has regulatory standards that are based on firm evidence. Apparently doesn't know the FDA that well, but it says in this case, I think they gave the product a pass. So this is one of their own experts, a medical researcher from none other than Johns Hopkins University, who's telling you they just gave it a pass. It doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. We all told them it doesn't work. And they just do it anyway. What about the possible side effects? So it doesn't really work. What are we talking about? The FDA's top drug regulator acknowledged that residual uncertainties surrounding the drug, but that the drug ability to reduce harmful clumps of plaque in the brain is expected to slow dementia. Right. So the person at the FDA, who's obviously the one that's making this happen, despite the evidence, is going, well, it's expected to do this. So all I can say is it's expected to do the thing that they all said wasn't happening and wasn't going to happen. But we're expecting it, though. Oh, well, I feel better. It says, quote, the data supports patients and caregivers having the choice to use the drug. Oh, really? The data supports that? All the data shows that it didn't have an effect, a statistically significant effect. But you're saying that because they should have a choice. Oops. Right? Isn't that interesting how they're happy to go, well, we know it doesn't work, but they should be able to choose. Okay, what about ivermectin? What about remdesivir? What about hydroxychloroquine? No, you can't use those ones, though. Or you can't even use vitamin D. You have to use the experimental injection. But you want this weird Alzheimer's thing that doesn't work? Well, you should have that choice. Do you not see how obviously hypocritical and what a double standard this is? It's clearly they think you should have a choice in the framework that they provide for you. But no, not over there, though, because we're desperate to get this thing in your arm in regard to the vaccine or injection over here. How incredible. She said the FDA carefully weighed the input of people living with the devastating debilitating disease. Oh, okay, so because they're living with a problem, we'll approve something that arguably doesn't even work just because it might. This should really insult you, especially if you've got a family member or somebody that was suffering because of things they weren't allowed to have because your government didn't care about you. Under terms of so-called accelerated approval, again, that's the point, accelerated approval, the fast track process, or what we're just talking about. So the same thing. So the FDA puts on accelerated approval. Why? Because Alzheimer's so bad, it's been bad for a long time. Something's going on here. The FDA is requiring Biogen to conduct a follow-up study to confirm benefits for patients. So even in this one, they have to follow up, but not for the ones we're currently working with, not the injections. Nope. If the study fails to show effectiveness, the FDA could pull the drug. So they don't even know, and they're still doing studies to find out if it's effective, yet they're allowing it to be used on people. Is that what they're supposed to do? Test the drugs on people in the real world and then decide if they're safe? Apparently so. That's what's happening right now. I hope it's clear that's not what they're supposed to be doing, or at least not what we're told they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be checking this stuff and holding the companies accountable and being a defense between you and their inadequacies, their incompetence. But now the FDA is part of that incompetence, or rather willful disregard. But guess what, guys? Biogen shares jumped almost 40% on Monday because of the news. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. 40%. You know, that just made people as rich as they've ever been in their lives, especially if powerful people invested millions of dollars. You just made a huge profit. Maybe it's not going to work at all. Maybe they'll pull it tomorrow, but that doesn't take the money out of their bank accounts, does it? Crazy. Now it says the approval came despite a scathing assessment in November by the FDA's outside panel of neurological experts. So why hire a panel of neurological experts if you're just going to go, well, we don't care what you think? It says the group voted no to a series of questions on whether the reanalyzed data from a single study submitted by Biogen showed the drug was effective. Here's the main point, and this is how this process actually goes. The drug companies and the government have all the say. And I'm not talking about the FDA. I'm talking about, you know, powerful entities in the government. They looked at the new information based on one new study that Biogen pushed through, and they said no. It says Biogen halted two other studies in 2019 after disappointing results, suggested the drug would not meet its goal of doing what they said it would. Okay, so two studies. They even had to stop mid-trial. They halted them because they weren't working, which seems to suggest that there was probably some side effect, right? But here's the point. Then Biogen jams one through after getting two in a row results of problems, and that final one still shows that it didn't have an effect. But I'm assuming it wasn't damaging, so that's probably why they liked it. And their own panel still says, nope, can't do it, and they go, ah, we're going to do it anyway. We like the reanalyzed data that doesn't show any effectiveness. It says several months later, the company reversed course, announcing that a new analysis of one study alone showed the drug was effective at higher doses, and the FDA had advised that it warranted review. Company scientists said the drug's initial failure was due to some patients not receiving high enough doses to slow the disease. Great, so just give them more of the thing. But the changes to dosing and the company's after-the-fact analysis made the results hard to interpret. Sound familiar? Raising skepticism among many experts, including those at the FDA panel. Ah, so they failed, and they failed. And they said, well, we need more of it then, and did their own study. And of course, they gave the analysis and the results, and the panel's going, well, this is impossible to discern. We don't really see what's happening. We're skeptical of what you're showing us because you guys lie about stuff like all these pharmaceutical companies do because they're about a profit. The FDA isn't required to follow the advice of its outside panelists, of course, it says, and previously disregarded their input when making similar because that makes sense that they would, APE's just trying to give them some shade. No, it doesn't. You don't disregard your experts and to make a business choice about a safety thing. Yeah, that's what they do, but that's what, not what they tell us they should. About 900 U.S. medical facilities are ready to begin prescribing the drug already, according to this company, with more expected to come. With FDA approval, the drug is almost certain to be covered by most insurers, including Medicare, and on and on and on, for more than 60 million people. But guess what? It doesn't matter. So the company jams through their own little study. The experts go, well, that doesn't show us. You're doing your own version of it. Like, think of Monsanto. They fail and they fail. They show they cause cancer. They do their own private study and they lie about everything. And that government goes, well, they're right. They win. This is the process. They failed. They failed. They did their own little quick study. Their own experts are going, that's not even clear. We can't tell what that says. And your government goes, good to go. The FDA main guy disregards all of the experts and they push it forward anyway. Think about what we're talking about right now with COVID-19 injections. Are we pretending that wouldn't happen anywhere else? Right? I mean, let's be grown-ups here and recognize that the obvious reality is these groups are corrupt. It's not hard to see. That's not a partisan point. It's not challenging your left ideology or your right ideology. It's the reality. And we need to be honest with ourselves enough to realize this is what's happening. Now, the reality, too, is that plenty of people are saying, well, that's probably not safe. The FDA approves this Alzheimer's treatment, but this one doctor says, I'm not going to prescribe it because it's not done right. Jason Carlaish, Dr. Carlaish, is simply saying, if somebody asks me, I'm going to say no. And you can read this for yourself, and it gets into the same things I just talked about. That it's not safe, that it's not tested properly, and they're pushing it through anyway, because that's what our government does. Here's the actual breakdown for you, so you can read it for yourself if you want to know more about it. I recommend you look into it, because I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to hear more about this in the future. And again, this was the actual location or the actual page granting accelerated approval for something that's shown not to work. Fantastic. Well, let's look at other things that had been shown not to work, and they didn't care as well. Latest VAERS data shows 5,165 deaths reported following COVID injections. That's a lot. VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System data, released today, this is as of the 4th, showed 294,801 reports of adverse events. Of course, following COVID injections, including 5,165 deaths, 25,359 serious injuries between December 14, 2020, May 28, 2021. 1% of the total, according to Harvard and Health and Human Services. They reported on this more than once. This is 1% of the total. Now, yes, the total, you could argue, is unverified. So as it has always been with flu before it and every other vaccine before it, this big pushback has never really been there in the way it is now. They've used this in the past to generally get a picture of what's going on. Now it's all dismissed no matter what, because we can't prove it. But remember, if it's not verified, that means it could be true and it could be false. It doesn't mean that it's reflexively false no matter what until we prove it. That's what they're playing this game at. 1% meaning times 100, and realize that we're talking about a pretty scary number here. And some of them are true, because we've already proven this. We've already proven to you blood clots and different things. And so why are we dismissing it all? Well, because there's an agenda to do exactly that. And the reality is, we keep talking about this like rare, it's rare, it's rare. But all of these combined don't make a picture of rare. Now, look, just because we talk about it like that does not mean that it's 50%. It's the same thing they used in the context of cases and everything else. It's relative. But it gets to a certain point where it's more than enough to be alarming and concerning. Look, this is what I keep saying from before. A 0.001% risk is too much for a child with 0.002% risk. Or excuse me, 0.0002, and added same thing in the first one. My point being, if a child at 0% risk, any risk is too much. If you're under 25 and you have a 0.01% risk, anything more than that is too much. anything the same is too much. I mean, this is crazy. But when we start to see how obviously more than this, that it is, and people start pointing out like the definition of what rare is, like this, we're getting ridiculous about this. 2,000 people, it says. 2,000 people had not just adverse events, severe adverse events, which death is one of those, to Pfizer Moderna vaccine, according to the Ministry of Health. 2,000 people have experienced severe adverse reactions after the first dose, which means it would be way worse with the second one of the Pfizer biotech or Moderna vaccine. And they should not receive an mRNA vaccine again, according to the Ministry of Health. The Ministry of Health themselves are pointing out the fact that this should not be used again because they had a problem. 2,000. So you realize that that in and of itself is a huge number. But by itself, you could argue if that was the only thing, well, maybe that's acceptable to you. As always, the real point is it should be your choice. I don't care if it was one person out of 100 million. If you realize that's possible, it's your choice to say no. That's not what they're doing today. Especially because this is really not at risk, especially if you're under 50. But they're pretending you're all going to die. So you have to take this thing, even though there's not, you know, on and on and on. It just gets so convoluted. That's why it's become a religion. But you combine this with everything else and you start to see a much larger picture of danger. As I said, extremely rare though, right? Mainstream media. But here's another one. Oh, before I get to that, I just want to point out some comments on this. Somebody says the hypocrisy of pushing for this while keeping even the possession of cannabis and natural psychedelics criminal is beyond mind-boggling. They have zero credibility. And again, that's the ridiculous nature of the government right now giving cannabis joints away in, I think, Arizona for people who want to get injections. So you're going to arrest somebody and put them in prison for the same thing that you're handing to them to get an experimental unapproved injection? Think about how wildly contradictory that is in 1,000 ways. They don't care. But the reality as well of pushing this while keeping other things illegal when they have a far better record and far better base of scientific research. And here's another one that I thought was exactly on the mark. Do you realize that 2,000 cases, so they're saying 2,000 people had severe reactions. There's, if you had 2,000 cases in your whole country, you'd get locked down. Or, you know, making an argument, maybe not 2,000, but whatever. The reality is, in, let's just say your state, if you suddenly have 2,000 cases pop up, well, they'll lock down your whole state. But 2,000 people can have possible death reactions. And we go, well, we don't know. We don't know for sure. It's just, there's no way you can't see that contradiction. And of course, remember the discussion of myocarditis. Is the COVID-19 vaccine causing rare myocarditis? Well, we just talked about in Israel, it was clearly pointed. Israel's government is saying there's a connection. There's a connection between this and the injection, so we're stopping these injections. It says researchers in Israel say they found a possible link between the Pfizer, and by the way, they say possible here. Their own article didn't say possible, by the way, but it says BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine in cases of heart inflammation in young men ages 16 to 30, according to the report submitted this week. By the way, I read this article in the past show I did, so you can look back if you want to see that it didn't say possible. It says the report concluded that around 1 in 5,000 men, 1 in 5,000 who received this vaccine may experience the side effect known as myocarditis, which is higher than the rate seen for the whole vaccinated population during the time period, which is 1 in 50,000. So here we are at a point where we're obviously seeing that you can't just be like, well, that's about the normal amount of people who would normally get it, which is what they've been doing about everything. Seven people in a row have heart attacks right after this. They go, well, that's about the right amount for their age group. In a row? I mean, come on. But they keep doing it. Well, here you go. You can't do it here. Same with those Japanese women. You can't. Their own study says this is higher than the rate that we would expect. So is it still rare? That's what they would keep saying. My rare, rare issue. Well, as Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, PhD, points out, 1 in 5,000, yet somehow not enough evidence to prove causality. Well, that's pharmacovigilance for you. Exactly. It's just incredible. They're tracking and monitoring, but yet ignoring the reality in front of them. Now, here's what's actually happening to children who have this potential. Children that are being coerced into coming in, even coercing them into ignore what their parents say. Saying, we don't care what your parents say. You don't even need their permission. Get an Uber, come on in here. We'll pay the Uber for bringing you, which they're doing, and we'll give you ice cream. We'll give you a free college tuition. We'll give you whatever you want. Come on in. Well, here's at least what's possible from that situation. This says, my son is 12. He's healthy with no underlying health conditions and wanted to get the vaccine before me to show me how it's done. And he's not nervous and had many vaccines and blood work done in the past. 60 seconds after his injection, he dropped and was knocked unconscious for minutes and now is suffering from a grade 3 concussion. We rushed to ER and the nurses and doctors were more than amazed, and no one once said why all this happened, because no one knows. Was it the injection or was it just a vasovagal attack? And what caused it? We don't have answers. I don't know if he ever will. Here he is. This is what happened to him. And if you're even for a moment going to pretend like, well, it could have been this or it could have been that. No, it's not. 60 seconds later, he passed out. This is affecting his body exactly like the scientific research is showing you that it can. Because of the spike protein, because of the lipid nanoparticles, because of every other thing we've talked about, and your government doesn't care. They're actively ignoring it, actively ignoring the data because they don't want to see it. Here is Motley Fool pointing out something that I think is very, very telling for multiple reasons, saying, why is Pfizer testing its COVID vaccine simultaneously with its pneumococcal vaccine for pneumonia? Isn't that interesting? So why would they want to give you the pneumonia vaccine at the same time, right? Is that interesting? Maybe because, well, I mean, look, you could play this a lot of different ways, but we know that pneumonia, just like it was in 1918, is clearly the big focal point in regard to what's really happening. And I argue being misdiagnosed or intentionally diagnosed as COVID-19, same with the flu doesn't exist magically. It's because it's all being called COVID-19. And with a PCR false positive rate of possibly 95%, it's very easy to see how that could happen. So if you gave it with this, isn't it a way that you could suddenly pretend that the COVID vaccine is working? If it all of a sudden dropped all the pneumonia, it's certainly possible. But in any case, the biggest point is that according to the Pfizer documentation with the FDA as of May 19th, they have never tested this injection alongside other vaccines, alongside any other drugs for that matter. So they don't know what could happen, which, by the way, is incredible, because you realize how many Americans are on antidepressants, how many Americans are antipsychotics. But who cares? We're not going to test this new experimental thing alongside all the drugs everyone's using. Because why? Because safety, right? OK, well, specifically, it says it has not been tested alongside other vaccines. So here we are administering it alongside other vaccines. Keith Spites and Brian Orell, PhD, as of June 5th, 2021. Main point, you can watch the video itself. It says Pfizer announced this week that the first participants have been dosed in a study where the company is evaluating a third booster dose of its COVID-19 vaccine with senior adults at the same time as the senior adults receive the Pfizer 20 valent pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. What's interesting there, first of all, is that we're talking about the third booster, which, by the way, shows you clearly that their plan was never to not do that. The booster was always in the cards, which shows you something. But they're now going to combine this with something else, which is either going to increase their sales for this injection, just because, as well as the fact that you're literally testing it on seniors who are at the most risk. Why would you test on them? Well, here, add the eugenics mindset. It says, we talked about the prospects in the past for a combo vaccine, but what do you think about the significance of this effort by Pfizer to give this to, you know, together? What's interesting to me is this is just more experimentation with some clear underlying motives here. But this really stood out to me as they're admitting this in front of everybody. Manitoba vaccine lead says mixing vaccines is simply part of pandemic's big human experiment. It's a direct quote, June 6th, vaccine lead, someone involved with the Manitoba vaccine company is telling you that what they're doing in regard to mixing vaccines. Remember the thing we just told you that their experts are saying makes no sense. There's no scientific basis. In fact, it's dangerous. Even the CDC still says on their website as of right now that you cannot mix these things. They're dangerous. They're not the same thing. Here they are going, yeah, we're going to mix them anyway. It's just part of our experiment on you. Big human experiment. You mean that thing we keep being told is fake news? Well, apparently so. She doesn't think so. Well, here we are. Let's just mix them all together and let's see what happens, including the COVID-19 injections. And meanwhile, they're desperate to keep you thinking that you're now the minority. even though you're not. 43% has been injected. And by the way, I don't even buy that, to be honest. Well, that's what I say right here. This is a clip that was sent to me.
Shots in the arms and more vaccination sites. And now 52%. 52% of American adults are fully vaccinated.
Okay, so Biden says it and it's now fact, right? I mean, literally, according to Mr. McNamara here, he said 52. I mean, look, he pulled it right from Biden. Didn't even look it up, apparently. Because you know how easy it is to look it up. It's right there. It's all over the place. But he just blindly regurgitates what Biden said because that's what people like this do. They blindly trust authority. That's how pathetic it is. But he's telling you 52%. It's not true. I just showed you. And I said, nope, fake news, medical misinformation. I guess Twitter's okay with that kind of medical misinformation that errs on the side of good vaccine positive or word winning, whatever. That's all okay. But you can't say things and back it up with source material because that's medical misinformation, according to Twitter. But it says it doesn't matter what source you use. It's not 63%, as Jen Psaki just lied about. It's not 52%, as Biden just said. It's just over 40 by all accounts. Frankly, I don't even buy that. But either way, they're lying to you. They are using those with one shot as fully vaccinated. And that is deceptive because Biden has been the one screaming how we all need to make sure we get both and have your cards because you have to get both. Well, suddenly, now that nobody's getting it, now they're going, well, let's just say one then. So we look like we're winning because we're liars. And as I said down here, this graph, which is right here, same one as before, showing you right here, that where we're at, United States, and this is people who have received at least one. That's what that says, right? So guess where Biden's getting his numbers from? 52% right there. You think Biden is doing that on accident? Somebody at some point is well aware that he's deceiving the American populace and saying that we're fully vaccinated with one shot. Uh-oh, Biden. You guess you're busted, but you know, they don't care though. If he just suddenly says one shot's acceptable, they'll all be like, well, you did, that's fake news. And then one shot is acceptable. Biden said so because Biden says it. It means it's real. The graph shows that only with one shot. Oh, strange. Here's the point. Is the U.S., it's 51%. What a coincidence. But wait, if you need two shots to be fully vaccinated, as Biden has stressed, and 51% only have one, how can 51 be fully vaccinated? basic math, guys. It's pretty funny. If you can't see by now that you're being deceived in some way or another, it's a choice. You're choosing not to see it. It's that obvious. And on the note of being deceived, let's talk about the mask discussion. Now, I'm going to try to go through this reasonably quick because we've done so much on the mask in the past. But I want to start out with one point here, right? So here's what the mask study finds. This is the only thing I want to talk about regarding the masks, right? So here is the mask study. Mask mandate and use efficacy in state-level COVID-19 containment as of May 25th, 2021. Now, guess what it finds? Most importantly, it says, there is inferential but not demonstrable evidence that masks reduce SARS-CoV-2 transmission. Well, there you go. There you have it, guys. That's your reportable headline right there. Demonstrable evidence that masks reduce SARS-CoV-2 transmission. Just like that. There's your headline. That's Fox. That's CNN. New study finds that masks work. Right? Easy as that. It's right there. Can't you see it? Okay. Hopefully you get my point. Here's the full study. Let's go through what it actually says, as opposed to what one little cherry-picked point can say and be misrepresented by the mainstream media, which is what they always do. Here's the point of the full roundabout. Results. Case growth was not significantly different between mandate and non-mandate states at lower high transmission rates. The surges were equivocal, meaning didn't matter. The same one or the other. Mask use predicted lower case growth at low but not high transmission rates. It's a prediction. Growth rates were comparable between states in the first and last mask use quintiles, five of them they're looking at, adjusted for normalized total cases early in the pandemic and unadjusted after full peak fall winter injections. Mask use did not predict summer 2020 cases, growth for non-Northwest or Northeast states, or fall winter 2020 growth for all continental states. That's the results, right? So it doesn't really seem to make it clear, does it? I'll get to the point, but it's easy for people to skim these things and walk away not really getting the full picture. Due diligence, guys, it's important. Conclusions. Mask mandates and use are not associated with slower state-level COVID-19 spread during COVID-19 growth surges. Containment requires future research and implementation of existing efficacious strategies. Now, if the mainstream media tried to make point this out, they would tell you, oh, this is a complete, it's not what they're trying to make it out to be. Here's what it actually says. They play that, they show you that one thing I showed you. Here's the point. That's what it says. And all it really says, it's not associated with slower state growth, but it does have an effect here, blah, 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 blah. Right. You'd be forgiven for misinterpreting it that way. But let's get into not just what the little small part says in the abstract or the conclusion at the top, which is what they almost always look at and read, because I don't believe they ever really read through these despite what they say. Here's what the full data says. And this is much, much different, and you'll see what I mean. Under materials methods, it says we obtained total COVID-19 cases. And this is important so you understand how they did this. Up to 6 March 2021 for the 50 United States from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Oh, and by the way, this is on MedRx, so it's not peer-reviewed, which is always important to point out, which they will fail to do in reverse when it's something they want you to believe in. But remember, as I always point out, especially today, as James Lanz-Weiler's pointed out, or as, say, that Dutch study in the beginning that was completely done properly has just never been peer-reviewed because they just don't want to ever peer-review it. Same thing here. Just because it's not peer-reviewed does not mean that it's false. That's an easy sidestep they want you to use, but just read it, understand it, and do the due diligence. See what you think about the way that they conducted the study. Now, the point is, they gathered the data, which means it could be wrong. The data could be false. It could be lying or blah, 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 right? But read through it. It says 50 United States from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They took it from the CDC. They said, give us all your data from these 50 states in regard to the time frame we're talking about. Total cases include confirmed and probable cases. So you see, basically, this is leaning into their illusion. You're taking their data about everyone that used masks in all 50 states. They then include the confirmed cases, which, by the way, just mean PCR, but even the probable cases, as defined by the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists. Now, here's what's even interesting on a side note. Briefly, confirmed cases require PCR, which we know, which means they're not in any way, shape, or form confirmed. Not even close. It means that they have a biologic, or what do they call it, molecular test that has a potentially 30% false positive rate, even according to the CDC, but most PhDs and experts that are intelligent on this will tell you it's much higher, possibly 95%, when using the cycle threshold that they tell you you're allowed to use. Shocking. I know. It's almost like they planned it, right? But that is not confirmed. But that's confirmed in this case, what they're saying. But then probable cases, which this admits what they're pretending is not even the case. Probable cases require one of the following: clinical epidemiological evidence, clinical or epidemiological evidence supported by COVID-19 antigen detection in respiratory specimens, or vital records listing COVID-19 as contributing to the death. So a doctor can write down that they died from a motorcycle accident, but COVID-19 was PAM positive and it led to his expedited death. They'll write that down as a probable case. We've been telling you this from the very beginning. That's why these numbers are false. That being stated, recognize that it's erring on their illusion, which is almost best for this because it shows you that even using their full data, it still shows you that there's no effect. Mandate issuance dates were obtained from state health departments and press releases. It says mask use is defined as the percentage of people who always wear masks in public settings. So that's the best way to do that. Strict. Okay, here's what they actually find. For each state, growth minima, this is important, so understand the terms. Growth minima and maxima were the 20-day mean lowest and highest cases day between the end of summer infection wave and the height of fall-winter infection wave. That's just because they reference minima, maxima. You'll see. Now, but out to the details. Results. Mandates are not associated with state COVID-19 case growth. Pretty clear. 33 U.S. states issued statewide mask mandates on or before August 2nd, 2020, when case growth was low. While 7 other states issued mandates after that date, we observed a 6-phase pattern in states with early, late, and no mask mandates. This suggests qualitative comparable courses of viral spread amongst states, regardless of mask mandates. So right out of the gate, they're saying it pretty much made no difference. The spread was the same, comparable amongst all of them, regardless of what they had. Now, it says average fall-winter mask use was 10% higher in early mandate states than in late and no mandate states. So they're telling you, in Average fall winter mask use was 10%. Oh, excuse me. That's mask use. We'll get to that point in a second. Higher in early mandate states, but it says confirming that mandates promote greater mask use. So that's interesting. What they're telling you is that you can't, one of the arguments here is that, well, we don't know whether or not they did it. There's, of course, there's always variables. Of course, they don't want to pretend those variables are present in regard to conversations on the side of COVID-19 cases or anything else or vaccine side effects, right? But in regard to whether this is the case and you're pointing to mask mandates and saying, look, why are their cases rising when they have all masks and vaccines? Well, maybe they're not doing it. Maybe they're lying. Yeah, maybe. You can always do that. But you got to do it everywhere if you're going to be honest, and they're not. They're taking at face value what they want while adding caveats to every possible thing that they don't like to see. But their point is, based on their research, people that had mandates clearly were seen to increase mask use. Now, it says, contrary to our hypothesis, early mandates were not associated with lower minimum case growth. Maximum case growth was the same among states with early, late, no mandates. So either minimum or maximum, it's either lower or the same. Not having an effect, if not better. It says this indicates that mask mandates were not predictive of slower COVID-19 spread when community transmission rates were low or high. Either way, differences between minimum and maximum case growth were similar among early, late, and no mandate states. So again, you're finding this wash where it's the same amongst all of them. And surges for minimum and maximum growth occurred at similar rates. Now, based on my research, I would have argued that you might even see an increase in places with masks because of the illness that it's causing. Now it says, surprisingly, normalized case growth after mandates, so cases reported at the very least, growing after mandates were indistinguishable among state groups. Moreover, growth curves after actual and effective mandates were not distinguishable among state groups at any date between mandate issuance and March 6, 2021. Together, these data do not support an association between statewide mandates and COVID-19 spread. That's a pretty obvious statement. They do not support an association at all between mandates and spread of the whatever we're talking about. Now, it says these findings suggest a link between mass and minimum growth may be an artifact of the tendency for faster case growth to occur at lower case prevalence. In support of this, we found no association between mask use and case growth at maxima when case prevalence differences were similar among states. There was also no association between mask use and normalized cases at maxima. The 10 states with highest and lowest mask use exhibited indistinguishable growth rates from 0 to 80 days after maxima. Indistinguishable. It says, this is under discussion, our main finding is that mask mandates and use are not associated with lower SARS-CoV-2 spread among U.S. states. Again, that's their main finding. Now, let me ask you something. Why wouldn't that be right up in the abstract? I'll tell you why. Because they know that they do. But if they state it in the abstract, the people like the media, the people that have their knee-jerk reactions about fake news will freak out. They'll make a big statement and they'll lose their funding. And the people that are supposed to, it just won't happen. So they give you this quasi middle ground thing up the top that the mainstream can skim and feel like, well, that doesn't really say what we don't like. So this is the point. They're telling you mask mandates are not associated with reduced spread. That's a huge statement. 80% of U.S. states mandated masks during COVID-19 pandemic, 80% of them, even though the science is showing that it did not have an effect. Oh, surprising, because the science before this said the same thing. Mandates induced greater mask compliance, but did not predict lower growth rates when community spread was low or high, minima, maxima. We infer that mandates likely did not affect COVID-19 case growth, as growth rates were similar on all days between actual or modeled issued dates and March 6, 2021. This complements a Danish random controlled trial, shocking, from the 3rd April to June 2nd, 2020, when growth rates were low, which found no association between mask use and lower COVID-19 rates, either for all participants in the masked arm or for strongly compliant participants only. So it didn't make a difference. Masks have generally not protected against other respiratory viruses. Make sure you see what that says. Masks have generally not protected against other respiratory viruses. Not, we think, or new science shows. That is a classic statement that's always been the truth until COVID-19 clown world. No one ever argued that these things were meant to stop viruses. It's meant to stop large droplets during surgery from falling into wounds. That's what they've said. That's what the science says. That's what the actual information says. Suddenly Clown World starts. And even though they came out early and said, no, don't use this, they don't even protect you, they go, oh, well, we were lying about that because of hospitals and stuff. And yet we then trust them? I mean, gosh, it's just, this whole thing is ridiculous. Masks have generally not protected against other respiratory viruses. Higher self-reported mask use protected against SARS-CoV-1 in Beijing residents. But, so even before this, random controlled trials found no differences in PCR-confirmed influenza among Hong Kong households assigned to hand hygiene with or without masks. They're telling you that even among the influenza, or specifically SARS-CoV-1, which is, by the way, interesting, because this kind of lets something out that wasn't really known, that they were using the PCR test during SARS-CoV-1. So why was it this new thing discussed recently with COVID-19 if it's been used all the way back then? I mean, we've talked about this all the way back to 2007 or before in regard to the epidemic that wasn't. But it's odd that it keeps being used and it's only now become such a focal point. But in any case, they're telling you that they did this and they found out that it had no connection to SARS in Beijing. But yet we'll still point back to the fact that look at all them in China wearing masks. They've been doing it forever. Yeah, and they keep finding it's not having an effect and they keep using it anyway. What's happening? It says medical and cloth masks did not reduce viral respiratory infections among clinicians in Vietnam. I mean, there's so many of these and no one cares because CDC did a model study in the lab in the middle of this whole pandemic. Or China and rhinovirus cloth or medical didn't stop any infections in China or Vietnam, and rhinovirus transmission increased among universally masked Hong Kong students and teachers in 2020 compared with prior years. Universally masked, and they actually increased transmission. Does that sound familiar? These findings are consistent with a 2020 CDC meta-analysis, which we've shown you 100 times, and they pretend like it doesn't work because we did something after that, because that's how science works, right? And a 2020 Cochrane Review update. The meta-analysis by the CDC is the only one that we should really... This is not the only one, but... is that the one right there? That's weird. Was it 29? That's the one. Let me see. We've shown you this so many times. Of course, it's not there. God, don't worry, because I have it. It's crazy that it would just disappear like that. What do you know, right? Oops. Well, here it is on the CDC website from May 2020. Non-pharmaceutical measures for pandemic influenza. And the finding is quite clear, as I've shown you a million times. 10 random controlled trials. In pooled analysis, they found no significant reduction using face masks. One of the most important parts is down here. It says there's limited evidence for their effectiveness in preventing transmission either when worn by infected persons or for source control. When worn by uninfected persons, both points they make, both are false. The CDC found that in May 2020, during all of this, it's like the mask thing at the beginning. No, they lied. Or how do you explain that? They just disregard it. It's pretty clear. Says the sudden onset of COVID-19 compelled adoption of mask mandates before efficacy could be evaluated. Exactly. Even though they lie about that still to this day. Our findings do not support the hypothesis that SARS-CoV-2 transmission rates decreased with greater public mask use, because they didn't. As masks are required in public in many U.S. states, it is prudent to weigh potential benefits and harms. They didn't do that. Masks may promote social cohesion as rallying symbols during a pandemic. That's what they're actually going for, making you think you're still in danger. But risk compensation can also occur. Prolonged mask use, 4 hours or more, promotes facial alkalization, and inadvertently encourages dehydration. I mean, these are interesting things. Alkalinity is the capacity of water to resist acidification. It should not be confused with best. That's interesting. But it says, which in turn can enhance barrier breakdown and bacterial infection risk. You know how interesting that is? So not only is the same thing we found about the British Medical Journal document, I include all these all the time anyway, but since I'm pointing it out for this point that I haven't pointed out in a while, here's from the British Medical Journal, the one that suddenly Tucker Carlson points out and then misquotes the date, says they did this last year. Nope, it was 2015. And this is definitely the one he points to. I pointed to this 100 times over the years, and suddenly breaking news, Fox points to the same thing. But the point is, as they find, the most important thing, moisture retention and reuse of cloth masks and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. Very, very clear, as well as the fact that penetration almost 97% of droplets going through your cloth masks. 44% for even medical masks, right? This is British Medical Journal, random controlled trial. No one cares. And that, and the, on top of that, they're finding that bacterial infection risk is increased simply because of these things they just listed from, so on top of that. So the masks, multiple directions are increasing your risk of infection. British clinicians have reported masks to increase headaches and sweating and decrease cognitive perception, precision. By obscuring nonverbal communication, masks interfere with social learning in children. Likewise, masks can distort verbal speech and remove visual cues to the detriment of individuals with hearing loss. Future research is necessary to better understand the risks of long-term daily mask use. Great. So we're testing on them right now. That's the research on your children right now. Conversely, it's appropriate to emphasize interventions with demonstrated or probable efficacy against COVID-19, such as, well, they claim vaccination, but guess what they list also? Vitamin D. Right. So things with obvious efficacy, things that they pretend don't exist. Add it to the growing list, guys. Ongoing. Here's another interesting thing, just speaking to the illusion, right? So that's obviously part of the illusion. Here's another interesting point. It says California County cuts COVID-19 death toll by 25%. Isn't that interesting? After finding some deaths, quote, clearly not caused by the virus. Well, we just talked about that. They're obviously doing this on purpose. Is this a way to make it seem like it's getting better? As point is, now do the rest of the country. Exactly. Here's the actual article. Cuts it in 25%, right? I mean, doesn't this seem to speak? I mean, here's the obvious reality before we even talk about this. If you can just arbitrarily be like, that looks wrong, let's cut that off. The whole thing is arbitrary. The whole thing is meaningless. It's subjective and based on their own deciding points. You know how you don't do that? And when you collectively decide on one exact way to do this, which every single state has a different way of doing it, which is obviously part of the plan, you decide on one way to do it and you make it absolute, proven in a lab. You died from this. We showed this, which is what you're supposed to do. Not today, though, because they want to err on the side of you being scared so they can keep you on lockdown and keep pushing things you don't need. As it says, a California county cut its COVID-19 death toll by 25% after determining how, who cares, that some deaths were not a direct result of the virus. Some, yeah, like you mean a lot of them? The county previously included deaths of anyone infected with the virus, regardless of whether COVID-19 was a direct contributing cause of death. So you're telling me that they just suddenly woke up and was like, wait a minute, that doesn't seem accurate. Let's do that today. How do you not see this as a planned roll down? They knew this was wrong from the beginning. We're taking a very liberal approach. Okay, so why on June 7th do you just arbitrarily decide to be like, pull that. Let's pull that, make it look like it's less. What about the other states? Are they doing that? Like, there's something really, really dishonest about this. You either pick that number and run with it and explain why it's not completely accurate, or you do it accurate from the beginning. You don't just middle of the ground, pull it and change it. What if they just do that tomorrow? What if they add something that makes it bigger tomorrow? What it becomes meaningless. Adding the department has always planned to conduct an update when cases and deaths stabilized. So there you are. This isn't a discovery. This isn't them going, oh, whoops, we made a mistake. And they're telling you clearly not. So they know, they've always known this. They've always known it was clearly not actual COVID cases. And they've also admitted just right here that they've always known they were going to conduct an update. Yet that didn't stop the state from putting people in jail for violating restrictions based on those inflated numbers. These people need to be in prison for what they've done. They are absolutely playing this to every possible benefit and destroying your job, taking your home from you, putting people in jail, stopping you from seeing your grandmother who just died, all because they know they've inflated the numbers. They always plan to pull it back. Nothing about this changes our policy decisions now or during the pandemic, they say. So you're telling me that knowing that it was 25% less wouldn't have changed your policy? That also admits something they probably didn't want you to know, that the policy is not based on the numbers. The policy is not based on the danger. The policy is based on an agenda. So who cares? It could be 50% less. We'd still do what we're going to do. So how does that make sense other than your danger, the numbers don't have a factor on our decision-making? Dr. Ramesh, an infectious disease expert and a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins, said the adjustments were expected. Gee, Johns Hopkins knew it was expected. I guess we didn't get told till now. Meanwhile, they've been screaming, you're all going to die up until they roll back the numbers. Perfect. Well, on another part of the illusion, take a listen to what even Sky News is about to say about the lockdown. You know, the lockdown that we were censored for saying is unreasonable. The lockdown for pointing out didn't work and hasn't worked. And the science shows that. Or how about the fact that he's going to show the same graph that I played and got censored for showing? This is not a joke.
Perfectly legitimate demonstration, especially when you consider that the reality around the world is now that more and more experts are claiming lockdown simply do.
Of course. YouTube is unhappy with me. Can you tell? By the way, I'm not even watching the chat today because it wouldn't load. It's every moment it comes up, it says disconnected, disconnected. For all I know, this has already been pulled from YouTube, so it's just kind of funny
this
to me.
This weekend marks.
Let me just see real quick. Looks like it's on. Good. Make sure you share anything but YouTube, guys. And if you're on YouTube right now, the question is why? Why are you there? But let's go back to this.
Like us, are we becoming more like them?
Hold on.
Last year, we saw scenes in Victoria.
No, we don't want to listen to your garbage. Let me find the point again. There we go.
Ultimate demonstration, especially when you consider that the reality around the world is now that more and more experts are claiming lockdowns simply do not work, and they don't have the data to back them up. This chart shows those US states that locked down over winter in blue and those that didn't in red. And it is unmistakable, despite whatever other factors may come into play, that statistically, lockdown states have higher deaths per million than non-lockdown states.
Oops. This, you've seen this graph because I showed it to you. Pretty hard to deny, right? But yet they're still happening. How is that possible? Trust the science, right? This, you're staring at it. It's pretty damn obvious that people, by and large, whether take an average or however you want to look at it, the states with lockdowns had higher deaths per million. And we're still doing it. And even Sky News can point it out, even though I was censored for sharing this exact same study. Because it's fake news right up until it's breaking news on mainstream media, right? How about the fact that the WHO has been telling you that this is not okay for a long time? I thought we weren't supposed to challenge WHO guidelines, right? Well, apparently that only applies to us.
I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Just look at what's happened to the tourism industry, for example, in the Caribbean or in the Pacific, because people aren't taking their holidays. Look what's happened to smallholder farmers all over the world because their markets have got dented. Look what's happening to poverty levels. It seems that we may well have a doubling of world poverty by next year. We may well have at least a doubling of child malnutrition because children are not getting meals at school and their parents in poor families are not able to afford it. This is a terrible, ghastly global catastrophe, actually. And so we really do appeal to all world leaders. Stop using lockdown as your primary control method. Develop better systems for doing it. Work together and learn from each other. But remember, lockdowns just have one consequence that you must never, ever belittle, and that is making poor people an awful lot poorer.
Hmm. Interesting, right? Well, clearly they like that because that was about, what, 5-6 months ago? And they're still doing it across the board. All the good guy states are all doing the bad thing, right? But who cares? Only we're not allowed to challenge the WHO or anything for that matter. Making poorer people an awful lot poorer. What do you think 2 years of a situation that they just told you will guarantee or will promise to make poor people a hell of a lot poorer? What do you think 2 years of that will do? Make them absolutely destitute and dependent on the government. Exactly. That's the point. Meanwhile, the richest people are consolidating all their wealth. We continue to see this. That the richest people in the world have gotten exponentially richer through this whole process, while the poor people have gotten exponentially poorer. I guess that's just a random consequence, right? Just a coincidence. Obviously not. because they're doing everything they're telling us. It's right in your face. And here we are, still marching forward. You know what it really comes down to, guys? Here's an interesting document that somebody shared with me. This is from I'm gonna reload it in a second so you can see the top of it. I just wanted to have this clip so you could read it exactly. This is in regard to frameworks for other pathogens. And the document is literally talking about 2030. Readiness for 2030. Isn't it weird how 2030 just keeps popping? It's almost like there's a plan, right? Here's what it says. This is before all this started. Talking about how we deal with influenza pandemics and the new pandemics that are all going to be coming, because we all know. It says, she asked how to gather the requisite political startup energy to develop that type of framework for the new pathogens in the absence of a crisis, right? How do we make this happen without a crisis? Well, it says a crisis, according to them, will probably be needed to instigate the process unless countries come to realize that the global health benefit of rapid sharing can only be gained through a multilateral regime. That sounds fun. But as always, a crisis will probably be needed to instigate the process. Just like they say, you know, before 9/11, that a catalyzing event like Pearl Harbor will be needed to drive. Oh, and what do you know? It certainly happened. Or sort of like when they said the same thing before this, when Donald Trump said we need another 9/11 like event to bring everyone together. Well, look at where we are now. Perfect. This is the same thing. Or how about that guy from the Washington Institute? I forget which group it was. Always, you know, saying, well, you know, maybe Iranian submarine will go down one day. Maybe won't come back up. Who knows why, right? We're talking about how every big event was started by something like that. They admitting that openly. We have false flagged these events into creation. We've shown you all this stuff. They're constantly talking about this. So we need to consider whether that's literally what this is. The event needed to create the cohesion to drive forward their agenda. The National Academic Press, exploring lessons learned from a century of outbreaks. It's on 2019, right before this started. Readiness for 2030. It's 2030 and you know nothing and you've never been happier, right? All these dates coming together. 2019. And they're talking about we needing a catalyzing event to bring everyone together, a crisis, a health crisis, in order to make this agenda possible. Could just be a coincidence, I guess, like so many other coincidences that we are told to ignore. But this is where this all seems to be leading, right? Why are they needing this? Why? What's the point? Why do they need to create an event like that? What's the end game? Just to get an injection in your arm? Well, it seems like there's much more going on, like Corbett's talked about, like we've discussed in the past. The idea that this is clearly about much more than just an injection, about transhumanism, about the Great Reset, about building back better, about everything that they've been trying to drive for a decade or longer. Or you could even longer than that, look at this like it is, which is part two of the 9/11 event. As Corbett's come to call it, COVID-9/11, because this is part of the biosecurity state. That was the security state. This is the next evolution of the same agenda. Now, this leads me to an angle of the nanotechnology discussion. Now, I have a clip that I was going to put up today from Brock, who sent it from in regard to my nanotechnology discussion just recently about the dangers of it. Now, I'm going to try to get that up and include that in the show notes here because it talks about the dangers of nanotechnology and why just the nanoparticles themselves are dangerous to your body, and they know that. But this is a different part of it. I'm talking about how Corbett's talked about, we've all talked about the concept of specifically the Converging Technologies document is discussing the altering evolution in 20 years part, where they said they were going to use nanotechnology combined with your body to alter evolution. Now, and here we are today with Corbett literally talking about the extinction of the human race in a transhumanist direction, and they're openly talking about that. So here's the next part of this, something called the nanobody, which, shocking, involves nanotechnology. What is it? It's exactly what it might sound like. It is a synthetic, engineered nanotechnology antibody. A single domain antibody, or SDAB, also known as nanobody, is an antibody fragment consisting of a single monomeric variable antibody domain. Like a whole antibody, it is able to bind selectively to a specific antigen. The first single domain antibodies were engineered, that's the important part, from heavy chain antibodies found in camelids. Now, this is like a camel. Now, the point is, even the ones from today, it says camelids are members of the biological family Camelidae, I think, probably something like that. The only currently living family in the suborder Tylopoda. Because, see, you know, coming from this animal, I guess, essentially. But that's where all of them are. Even the ones currently today they're talking about are the same concept. Here is where this is all going from today. This is April 22nd, 2021. Preparing for the future, nanobodies for COVID-19. Have you even heard about these before? Clearly, there's some connection here for what they're trying to do. Nanobodies for COVID-19. Now, they talked about this as sort of like a monoclonal antibody kind of treatment, but not. Because we're talking about engineered synthetic stuff. But in regard, generally speaking, I thought there was something I was going to have in here. I guess not. Hope I'm not missing something. Okay, I know. Here it is. I got it past it. So, all right. So this is alarming to me. Coming down the time frame, April 22nd, talking about nanobodies for COVID-19. Here is April 6th, local made intranasal vaccine on the way. Right? So it's already being built. This is what I keep trying to show you. And almost a month later, a little less than a month, 3 weeks later, they write an article going, is this the future? Is this new thing that we're talking about? You read through this and it's about like a futuristic concept. It's already being made. And shocking, it's working with nanotechnology. It's exactly the same point. That's what this is. This is a nanotech nasal spray. And that brings us into the real alarming part, which is seemingly what this is all about. University of Pittsburgh, I'm not going to get into today. We've talked about that in regard to COVID-19 with the Whitney Webb and a lot of different things, but inhaled nanobodies apparently effective against COVID-19 in hamsters. But wait a minute, this is May 26th. I thought it was the future, and we're already injecting this into hamsters? Yeah, because it was already in the works. Now, this is pretty nuts. It says, in a paper published today in Science Advances, this is, again, May 26th, 2021, researchers from University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine showed that inhalable nanobodies, so nanobot antibodies or nanotechnology antibodies, targeting the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus can prevent and treat severe COVID-19 in hamsters. Now, did you catch what that says? Targeting the spike protein. So not only does this now admit that they're well aware that the spike protein is the problem, but they're actually creating things that seek out and target the spike protein. So how does this not show that they're aware that the spike protein in their injection is equally as alarming? It does. Add it to the mountain of points that show you that they don't care about your safety, that the injection going in your arm trumps everything. But they're saying inhalable nanobodies targeting the spike protein. So you breathe this in your nose, or you breathe it in somehow, breathe it in. Could go in either way. Kind of the point of the picture today, showing just an aerosol spray. Suddenly, nanobody injections or vaccines, which is essentially what this is, can be sprayed everywhere, in a room, anywhere else, and you would never know. Now, is that going to happen? I don't know. Is it possible? Yes. Has your government done stuff like that before? Yes. Targeting, and remember, we just talked about vaccinating the world. That's all they're talking about now. We need the entire world. Well, here you go. And, you know, that even further, you know, real conspiratorial for all the people that really don't like to think outside the box. When talking about how we see technology and it tends to be something they've already used for 20 years and they're only now pretending it's new. How about the fact that we only now see this being discussed and it's probably because it's already been used for 20 years. Certain like that kind of thought should scare some people because they've done that before. But real, just again, to reiterate the point, if you're targeting the spike protein, that means they know it's the dangerous part. That means that they're trying to seek it out. Now, would this not be also used in regard to like combination with the... I mean, I don't even know how that would work. Like, if you're targeting the spike protein, that only applies to when they claim you're sick from COVID-19. So why then give them an injection with the spike protein? If your whole point is to stop the spike protein because that's the thing hurting them. Like, this completely contradicts everything they're doing right now with these injections. I can guarantee you the mainstream media won't talk about this. It says this is the first time the nanobodies which are similar to monoclonal antibodies, but smaller in size, more stable and cheaper to produce. That's quite the understatement about what they actually are, were tested for inhalation treatment against coronavirus infections in preclinical model. Interesting. Inhalation treatment. Just thinking about the context of other things we've already heard about skin contact and whatever else, if you try to think about what that, if there makes more of a connection there. The scientists showed that low doses of an aerosolized nanobody named Pittsburgh Inhalable Nanobody 21, or PIN21. That's just the name of it. You can see, remember that. PIN21. That's the nanotechnology antibody that can be put in your body by aerosolization. Now, remember that just because they say that all it does is attack the spike protein, is it not possible that it could do a lot more? Yes. We talked about it delivering neurotransmitters. We've talked about it delivering drugs of all sorts of different kinds, being able to communicate mesh with outside technology. All these things are very easy to prove. But all we want to pretend, they would never do that. It's not like they've done it a million times before. They would never do it today because, oh, we trust Biden or we trust Trump or blah, blah, blah. Because I trust politics because I'm a child. Clearly, it's something that's possible, that can be inhaled and do a lot more than what we think it can do. Now, one thought I just had was, what about something like this being widely dispersed? So in their mindset, they're stopping people that are having the effects of the spike protein, even from the injection. So it ends up looking like it's working. Just a random thought. Previously, she and colleagues discovered a large repertoire of more than 8,000 high-affinity SARS-CoV-2 nanobodies. From this repertoire, the scientists selected an ultra-potent nanobody, NB21, and bioengineered it into a trimeric form to further maximize its antiviral activity. Of course. Sort of like the command, like this is meaning that, like, this is leaning into the same idea that I argue this could eventually be used to bioengineer different parts of it and use the same drug for all sorts of different things. It's the same concept of this platform and everything else they're doing. But the bottom line is, this is experimental technology using nanotechnology, which is shown in and of itself to hurt your body. And we're talking about this using it in regard to COVID-19 to target something that they otherwise tell you is good for you in a different version of their treatments for COVID-19. If there was a modicum of honesty in the mainstream media or anything, this would be like, okay, none of this makes sense anymore, and we all need to reevaluate what's going on. But nope, that'll never happen. Here is a Huffington Post article from all the way back in 2015. But always note, here's the funny part. Somebody writes this article in 2015, and they come back and update something in 2017. But, you know, at least they write it down. Fox News, CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, they don't do any of that. They update and change stuff all the time, change titles, and don't even put an asterisk anymore. But they're the main journalists of our time, right? The liars. But here's from Huffington Post. In 2030 again, what do you know? Nanobots in our brains, what? Will make us godlike. You mean that conspiracy theory? Yeah, because this wasn't a conspiracy theory back then, because it wasn't then and it's not now, because they're literally working on nanobots to put in your bodies to make us do. It's the whole transhumanist discussion. The DARPA, the military, they've been working on this stuff with this exact purpose for a decade or more. And yet today you talk about the idea of even the technology existing and people on Twitter laugh because they've been so heavily socially engineered and propagandized. Because they don't want you to even consider it's real because they might think it connects with COVID-19, that they just laugh at it. And we're the crazy ones. Just like everything else we've told you guys, 2030, the whole point, there's an end goal, a plan, and it's just like this. As he keeps telling you, it is meant to be mixed with your body.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
And that's not hyperbole. That's not an analogy. They are openly talking about it. I've shown you the one that I'll show you in a minute, the one that James goes over again, the bio-digital convergence. I've gone over the whole document, literally outlining how they're going to blend the human species with something new and change it forever, exactly like what they told you would happen in 20 years back in 2002, right? It's all there. They've been telling you and people that don't want to hear it pretend it's not there. Here's what James was just talking about. I recommend you watch this whole thing, as well as everything Corbett does, because he's doing an... I've never seen something Corbett does that I think is not absolutely well done. He does such a fantastic job, and that's also why he's being censored. Your Guide to the Great Convergence. Great video. Also note that he's X'd out YouTube. Good for you. Very great article. Of course, he points to a lot of important stuff in here. The idea that what they're really doing comes down to like the extinction of the human race. And he points out this one document. I just wanted to share this, but please watch the full video they did. It's an excellent video. But so he'll do a video talking about the open discussion about not just altering the human race, but like the end of what we are. But in their minds, and strained as like is a progress, right? Like us going away from humanity is a step in the progression direction, right? But that's, yet he could talk about it today. And I could show you right now on places have been posted on Twitter when people talking about it, and it's, they will ask like, this is fake news. It's completely fake. That's no such thing. This is conspiracy theory. It's not real. Here's the Wall Street Journal saying exactly what Corbett just said. And he points it out in his video, looking forward to the end of humanity. Of course, because it's not real at all, right? They're not actually talking about that. This is back in June 2020, right in the middle of all this. It says the COVID-19 has spotlighted the promise of peril and transhumanism, the idea of using technology to overcome sickness, aging, and death. Well, I'm not, of course, I will never support these groups, but here's the one point I wanted to say. Just to carry this over. Transhumanists envision several possible avenues to immortality, right? Oh, and the point they make clear here is that people like, Elon Musk, right? I mean, all the people you might expect, they're the ones that are investing in this. It's right here. Jeff Bezos, Peter Thiel, Elon Musk are among Silicon Valley moguls who have invested in life extension research. In 2013, Google entered the field by launching its biotech firm, Calico. Clearly, they are all trying to live forever. And here's the point. Nanorobots could live inside our cells and constantly repair damage. In June 20, 2020, at a time when we were simultaneously pointing out that this is a real thing that they're all talking about, and we were being censored because it's fake news. Not even in the context of COVID-19, but in that context, because they're using nanotechnology to work with COVID-19. No, that's all fake news. Oops. Right? All right there. All the science is right in front of you. They don't care. But it goes on to say, using nanobots to live in your body and your cells and repair damage, halting aging and its tracks. Of course, if you're a zillionaire and able to afford this, nobody poor will be able to afford this. Genetic engineering could eliminate the mechanisms that cause us to age in the first place. Such technologies are still out of reach. Not even true, though. I mean, maybe in regard to the age, I mean, it's just, they always want you to think that this is some distant future thing. But transhumanists believe we will be able to master them sooner than most people think with the help of superpowered artificial intelligence. Exactly. Exactly. And there's more to that, in my opinion, of how AI plays a part in this. But this is real. Nanotechnology, it's right in your face. They're telling you that it's going to be in your body. And by the way, my gut tells me it's already there. After all that I've seen over this whole process, just from COVID-19, since the beginning of all this, after everything I've seen and what they're all talking about, I am of the sneaking suspicion that it's already happened. Just my gut, though. As always, trust the data. Do your research. November 20th, 2015. This seems like an important thing to share, just in case, because it seems like it's relevant. Electric fields remove nanoparticles from blood with ease. Now, this also seems to suggest that nanoparticles that enter your body don't leave your body. So at what point does it become toxic? Well, that's easy. We just talked about that. It becomes toxic right away. There's plenty of damaging things that their own research has shown quite clearly can lead to buildup and toxic effects, all sorts of things. It's almost like it causes everything we just talked about in regard to the spike protein, everything else. But it can build up in your organs, your reproductive area. We went over all of it. I'll include that in the show notes. But this also seems to suggest that it just right in the beginning, it's bad, but that it builds and doesn't ever leave your body, only increasing the possibility that it could hurt you. Now, what happens if this becomes ubiquitous? There's nanoparticles in everything all the time. Well, how long until people start having extreme toxicity to this stuff? Here's what it says. Engineers at the University of California, San Diego, this is back in 2015, developed a new technology that it, an oscillating electric field to easily and quickly isolate drug delivery nanoparticles from blood. The technology could serve as a general tool to separate and recover nanoparticles from the other complex fluids for medical, environmental, industrial applications. So in 2015, we're already so far advanced in the using of these in people's blood or something that we're making tools to pull it back out of the blood. I mean, this is something that people right now are still going, that's not even true. This has been going on for a decade or more. And they're literally having tools already 6 years ago to pull this out of your blood. But let's pretend like it wasn't happening. Nanoparticles, which are generally 1,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair, think about that, are difficult to separate from plasma, the liquid component of blood. And think about this in the context of what Red Cross was saying, right? Due to their small size and low density, traditional methods to remove nanoparticles from plasma samples typically involve diluting the plasma, adding a high concentration sugar solution to the plasma, and spinning it in a centrifuge, which is interesting. We always see that in movies and different things. Maybe that's what it's always for. Or attaching a targeting agent to the surface of the nanoparticles. These methods either alter the normal behavior of the nanoparticles or cannot be applied to some of the most common nanoparticle types. So how long has this been actually going on? Do they need to pull this out of your blood? Because, this is an interesting step. Red Cross was because of possibly this, but also because I believe they know the spike protein was present in the blood. So it wasn't usable, wasn't viable. Could be for both. But it says, this is the first example of isolating a wide range of nanoparticles out of plasma with a minimum amount of manipulation. This new nanoparticle separation technology will enable researchers, particularly those who design and study drug delivery nanoparticles for disease therapies, back in 2015, to better monitor what happens to nanoparticles circulating in a patient's bloodstream. Oh, great. So we're already using this in people, delivery nanoparticles for delivery. I bet you lipid nanoparticles have been used in things we don't even know because they didn't care to tell you. And the point is, it's being tested on you. Good. So we get to test this out and we'll get to see what it's, monitor what happens. We can monitor these nanoparticles inside your blood. Good. One of the questions that researchers face is how blood proteins bind to the surface of drug delivery nanoparticles and make them less effective. Researchers could also use this technology in the clinic to determine if the blood chemistry of a particular patient is compatible with the surfaces of drug delivery nanoparticles. Let's assume they figured all this stuff out. The device used to isolate the drug delivery nanoparticles was a dime-sized electric chip manufactured by Loyola-based Biological Dynamics, which licensed the original technology from UC San Diego. The chip contains hundreds of tiny electrodes that generate a rapidly oscillating electric field that selectively pulls the nanoparticles out of a plasma sample. Researchers inserted a drop of plasma spiked with nanoparticles into the electric chip and demonstrated nanoparticle recovery in 7 minutes. The technology worked on different types of drug delivery nanoparticles that are typically studied in various labs. So if all this is 2015, let's go and assume clearly that this has not only been already used, but has been worked on as the future long before anybody was ever told about this. Don't you love this illusion of a democracy and, everyone's involved? Like, these choices aren't given to you. You don't decide what's happening. Because let's not pretend for 1 second this is governmental. These colleges are working on stuff that's being funded by institutions that are being controlled by the government. Right? I mean, it's obvious. This is what is happening. And this is the future, and this has been the plan for a long time. It's just time to get with it and understand it. But don't worry, though, because the IMF, WHO, WTO, and the World Bank, they all are speaking up and saying, give us $50 billion, and we'll just end the pandemic. As simple as that. Sounds like a bribe, doesn't it? It's potentially the best use of public money. Just give us $50 billion, and it will end it. It'll be over. Well, I wonder what they want to do with that. Do you think maybe that's just the means to an end to build the plan that they've already wanted to build? Yeah, of course. We're going to reimagine the world with that money. We're going to change everything. And then ask for $100 billion more, on and on and on. These are the people that have put you here and they now want $50 billion. I just can't even wrap my mind around how people can look at this and go, they care about us. Well, it's all leading to this direction. This is where it's all going, and it's all about continually boxing you into the digital gulag. As Robert F. Kennedy Jr. points out on June 8th, Amazon will just automatically connect all wireless smart devices, including Alexa in your bedroom and Echo speakers in your living room and Ring cameras on your front door, into a, quote, mesh wireless network that could pose privacy and safety. Look, I'm going to go ahead and tell you flat out, it will cause privacy violations. 100%. Right now, they use Ring cameras to look across the street, to look, they can tap in at any moment and look at what's going on in your front door and your street. And they use that right now. And that's open. A mesh network, meaning they're interconnected at any given moment and they can listen simultaneously. Now, here's an interesting point. Not only is this alarming that Amazon has already built this network of surveillance inside your homes and out that they're using against everybody, of course, to protect you, they'd want you to believe. I have this interestingly, this alarming idea about, we're talking nanotechnology here, right? We already, look, it's not a secret. Lipid nanopart, there's nanotechnology in every single one of these injections. And regardless of specifically Moderna and Pfizer, what I'm talking about today, but the point is that these are being injected in people. Now, we've already talked about, Whitney and I, the discussion of the artificial intelligence issue and how they've been trying for a long time with machine learning techniques to get the singularity, but have been failing. Simply a thought of mine. I'm desperately concerned that what they're trying to accomplish amongst everybody is a mesh network of our minds. Now, that may sound wildly crazy to people that aren't aware of what's been done before and what's actually capable today. I'm not saying I can prove this, but it's just a thought to share, float out there. Maybe you'll find something. Think about the possibility of meshing, just like we're talking about here, in the same way, your nanotech, at the very least, within your body, that could then be used to mesh us to a degree. Now, could that be used? Talking about the blood-brain barrier, the magnogenetics, the concept of your brain with the nanotechnology, which is where it all ends up in the point. But now, could that not be the point of finding a way to further aid the machine learning process in a way they've never been able to do before? Just a simple thought. And then what would that mean? What are they then capable of? These things scare me because they're real and possible. And nobody wants to consider it. Well, here is something, let's just call it a laugh out loud story that was shared with me. Israel Defense, U.S. is trying to understand how authoritarian regimes control information. This is not a joke. So an authoritarian regime is trying to understand how authoritarian regimes control information. Gee, I wonder if it's how they can learn better lessons of how to control our information, right? It's like them reading 1984 to understand how to understand, how to better understand how to suppress our rights and control what we think. And it's so pathetic. This is DARPA. DARPA published an invitation. An invitation to develop a prototype open source AI-enabled software that will measure how those bad guy digital authoritarian regimes out there repress their populations at a scale over the internet. Okay. So first of all, the U.S. government, without question, is one of the most technologically advanced governments in regard to its you know, ability to act online, suppress cyber attack, and so on. You know, there's a bunch of them you could argue are varying levels of how, you know, whatever, but they're up there, right? So when they're saying, oh, those digitally authoritarian regimes, well, they're not going to talk about Israel. They're not going to talk about Saudi Arabia. It's going to be those bad guys that they don't like. It'll be China and Russia and Iran. Okay, so are you really pretending that they are more advanced than the U.S. government? Let's just say Iran, for instance, or Syria. Obviously not. So how in the world is monitoring how Syria suppresses their people, as they're claiming, going to help the U.S. better understand anything? You see how flimsy this fake veneer is. It's such an obvious lie. I think what they're trying to do is just better crack down on controlling of information under a guise of trying to fight for your information control. That is exactly what they do with everything. Here's a Patriot Act. It's all about patriotism, except literally sucks the patriotism and freedom out of the room. But we'll pretend it's for patriotism, right? In a new challenge to Russia, China, North Korea, of course, because those are the ones, the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, published an invitation to propose research that sheds light on ways in which totalitarian regimes control the transfer of information. So essentially, they're going to monitor China and Russia and Iran and North Korea and be like, oh, I see what they're doing there. I see how they're controlling information. as if they don't already know. Like, they think we're children and thus act against them. Oh, good. So you're going to monitor them and then use this as a guise to not only learn if you can, but also step in and control them more under a guise that they're doing bad things they shouldn't. So just it's the technological step in regard to the same old protest scenario. Oh, they're shooting protesters. We have to step in. This case, it'll be, oh, they're suppressing protesters online. We have to step in. Same thing. Or maybe they cyber attacked their group, or who knows how they translate this over. But it is, and thus act against them. So we're going to monitor North Korea. And if they so choose to monitor and suppress their people, we're going to jump in because we're such good guys. Does anybody buy this anymore? The research will carry out under a program called MICE. Perfect. Perfect. Like, just so this is how they see us all. We're a bunch of mice in a testing zone, which stands for measuring the information control environment, because an experiment. During the project, researchers will try to develop a prototype open source AI-enabled software and algorithms that will, quote, measure how digitally authoritarian regimes repress their populations at scale over, you mean, exactly what you're doing right now? You mean exactly what's happening in the United States to people who are speaking out about things that you disagree with and you're repressing their information, authoritarian style? Like, it's even people who support them can recognize how stupid it is for them to step up right now and be like, we're going to monitor other people who are suppressing information flow. Either they're that completely out of touch with even what they're doing, or they just are doing this, and this is what I think it is, as a way to cover what they're doing. It's remedial, reverse psychology, I guess. Like, it's very, very remedial. This is how stupid they think we are. To just, so they're suppressing info, so they come out with a group that says, we're going to fight against suppressing info. Yep, every day they do that. We're fighting for, you know, I mean, it's ever, you name it, and they come out with a group that's doing what they claim they're not doing. It's a cover for what they're obviously doing. Quote, MICE developed technology will continuously and automatically update, so AI, understand, and feed into easily understood dashboards in order to develop comprehensive real-time ground truth understanding of how countries conduct domestic information control. Ah, so not only is it also a sidestep into their country, but it's also a way to hack them. This is like the insect allies. We're doing it to protect crops. No, you're doing it to destroy them. This is a way to get inside and destroy and hack and break down and sabotage and be like, oh, we're just monitoring their information flow. MICE will also try to determine the technical capabilities of those countries to use. Yeah, yes. So now, and we're going to monitor and track everything they do so we know how what they have and how they can attack. But it's all for you, though. These proposals must detail how, in which environments they will monitor information control and explain how government and civilian agencies interested in the freedom of internet, in the freedom of the internet, could use technology that will develop for these purposes. Proposals will be accepted and the winners will receive $1 million. Freedom of the internet, like Susan Wojcicki getting a free speech award. That's how stupid this is. The very people who are actively trying to control the internet are fighting for the freedom of the internet. It's just so stupid. Here's the actual document. You're going to get a kick out of what it says down here. Measuring information control. This is from the new SAM.gov website. It says, under the code 541715, well, research and development in the physical, engineering, and life sciences. Except nanotechnology and biotechnology. Ah, well, that's kind of telling, isn't it? So you don't want us looking at nanotech and biotech? Why would that be? You mean the two things that you're currently using to control everything and change evolution? And I mean, the biodigital convergence and blah, blah, blah. Don't look at those two things. Oh, look over here. Look over at North Korea and these old sciences that are doing things dangerous. Don't look over at us while we're actively using nanotechnology to change your entire life in front of you. Don't look at those two things. Does that seem obvious or what? God, it's just they are doing what they can to keep you from paying attention everywhere, as well as censorship, right? As well as creating the illusion about why you aren't actually able to report on things because the news media is losing. They are gone. The corporate legacy media is broken and a bunch of whining children stomping their feet and plugging their ears and going, government, stop those YouTube guys because they make us feel stupid. That's about the gist of it. I just watched some really embarrassing clip where some guy was just basically trolling Fox News, and they can't even do their job, which is lie to you, while the guy's filming them. Like, they're embarrassed, and the camera guy gets all mad and is like, you gotta get out of here, you stupid. And it's embarrassing. They clearly think they're better than you, and they clearly think that they know everything when they're some of the most uninformed people in the world, in my opinion. And then they go get the police, and they say, police, stop him from doing what he's legally allowed to do, and the police did nothing. It's just embarrassing. But that's why they do this. This is at the behest of the media. I can promise you that. Washington court rules unconstitutionally, illegally, that YouTubers aren't members of the news media. So you mean like that mainstream media YouTube channel, they're not media? Oh, whoops. I guess only you YouTubers, the ones we don't like, they're not allowed. It's so subjective, it makes my teeth hurt. And the whole point is, you read through it and you find very clearly that it's all about who they dislike. Even their definition about what press is, like, I'll wait till I get to the point. Let me read through this article, and then I'll prove to you why this is not only unconstitutional, but illegal. The Washington State Supreme Court rules that YouTubers are not a member of the news media, and therefore do not qualify for press privileges. Which, by the way, there's no such thing. That is something that exists because of the circles they've created outside of the law. Courtrooms and people who enforce them will say, no, you can't come in here, only the news media. Well, that's not the law. In fact, the Supreme Court has ruled routinely that's not the truth, but they do it anyway now, right? Or they, give them certain passes in certain rooms and say, oh, only these guys with these passes can come in. Well, those passes are not, to stop someone without that pass is unconstitutional, unless it's a private room. But they do it anyway. Sound familiar? I mean, that's like everything we're talking about today. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the law. They care about as a means to an end. If the law works against their agenda, they act like the law doesn't apply to them. It says the ruling shows how existing legislation works against individual and independent journalists whose medium is online platforms. Well, you know what? Existing legislation doesn't mean anything if it's repugnant to the Constitution. But you see, that's also not happening, because even though we know that's the case, even though the Supreme Court has ruled that exactly, Mayberry, I think, is the name from the case. They just keep moving forward. They claim they can pass laws that are counter to what the Constitution says because they think they're above all of it. They think because they're the governor of a state or whatever, they can just do what they want because they're in charge, even though they swore an oath to that Constitution. Sort of like BDS laws, like Georgia just ruled it's illegal because it is, but they do them anyway. It's crazy. Here's what it says. The state laws define news media. Of course, this, by the way, in and of itself is a deception. News media, it's the press. But you see, they've created their own category. The news media is their protected class. The news media, not you, of course, but the news media, the elitists, that is what we're talking about, but that doesn't mean anything. We're talking about the press and whether you're press or not, because what's protected is the press. Now, the state law defines as such, but news media, any newspaper, magazine, or other periodical, book publisher, news agency, wire service, radio, or television station or network, cable or satellite station or network, or audiovisual production company, or any entity that is in the regular business of news gathering and disseminating news or information to the public by any means, including but not limited to print, broadcast, photographic, mechanical, internet, or electrical distribution. Now, you understand, they ruled stating that YouTube doesn't count. First of all, how is that even possible? Now, let's just take YouTube out of the equation. Look, YouTube is ridiculously broken. Just because I also put stuff on YouTube doesn't mean that I also put it on 15 other platforms and post it on my website and that we're literally part of a massive network platform. Exactly what they're talking about. Are we not an entity that is in the regular business of news gathering, disseminating news or information to the public by any means, including but not limited to print, broadcast? Yes, that literally defines what we're doing. Okay, but let's just even take that aside. How about somebody who on their own decides to start an audiovisual production company? Not part of the click club, not part of the group, the inner click, no. But just you're on your own. And then you show up to one of these events without any invitation and try to go in and say, look, I own my own company. They're going to say no. You don't have a pass. You don't get to come in. But didn't the law just reprove? Yes, they don't care. It's a means to an end. All they're trying to create is a special club where you're not allowed, even though you literally fit the definition of what they just described. YouTube or not, we are a news agency. Period. We actually have a radio station. True. WKUP. We don't use it as much anymore, but it's there. Audio production. We do that every day. Any entity in the regular business of news gathering? Yes, clearly. This applies to every single person anywhere producing news. It doesn't matter whether you agree with their news. It doesn't matter if you think that it's correct. It doesn't even matter if you think they have the right to do it. The point is that the law states that anybody can be. They just don't like that because they think it diminishes what they are, because they have a very and a inappropriately wrong or high opinion of themselves. Here's what the Constitution states. First of all, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Now, the point is, or of the press was something that was added after the fact. Not after the fact, but before it was signed, but it was a secondary draft that was added. And people tend to argue that it's different. Now, this isn't even the point. The point is about the understanding of the law that's happened since then. But the reality is, if you take this face value, it's saying that they should make no law prohibiting the free exercise or abridging of freedom of speech or of the press. Or clearly means it applies in the same sentence. So the question would be, what is the press? They can't make a law that prohibits your exercise or abridging your freedom of speech or the press. They can't, even though that's literally what this just did. That's what that is. That's a law that clearly selectively defines what it is or isn't. Right? That is literally unconstitutional on its face, just so we're clear. But going forward, what is press? This is a legal, this is the free legal dictionary. So it's a legal definition. What it says, first of all, just the idea of printing, right? Printing press is what the art of printing, and that the press is free. It says all men have a right to print and publish whatever they may deem proper, unless by doing so they infringe the rights of another, as the case of copyrights, when they may be enjoyed. For any injury that may commit against the public or individuals may be punished either by indictment or by civil action at the suit of the party injured when the injury has been committed against a private individual, blah, blah, blah. The point is, oops. Simply, all men or women, of course, at this point, this is, it's funny how we still have all these definitions to, you know, it's funny. How it doesn't really matter. It's like, you know, first, my family, it doesn't, I don't want to get into it, but the point is, it's the concept of, historically speaking, when you're saying all men are created equal, that's speaking about women too. Just because people are all weird about it today, it's just so meaningless to me. It just makes me laugh. Not to say that there's not obvious discrimination that happens, but changing what things said before it's revisionist. It's wrong. Move forward in the direction you like. Don't go take things down from before because that's wrong. History is there. To try to change it the way you like today is stupid because you could be wrong today too. People are so certain about what they believe is right and they're willing to go back and change things historically because of their opinion. Doesn't that seem pompous to you? By the way, even if I agree with something, it's just funny. But the point is that everybody has the right according to legal definition. But here's the most important part. The First Amendment Encyclopedia. The First Amendment's language appears to provide a special right for the press, for what has been termed the Fourth Estate, the fourth unofficial branch of government that serves as the watchdog of a free society, monitors the official three branches of government, or so we are led to believe. That has long since, if ever, been the actual purpose. A watchdog that works for and does what they're told by the government. That's what it is today. But court, this is what matters, has given journalist access rights has not given journalist access rights any greater than the public. Excuse me. It says the U.S. Supreme Court has taken a narrow view of the press clause and has held in a line of cases with the First Amendment does not provide the press any greater right of access than that of the general public. That is as clear as you can make it. Not one, not two, but a line of cases. They have held the same ruling that the press does not have any greater right to access than anybody else. Meaning you, if you so choose, can be the press. It says, for example, in Hotchins versus KQED, Inc., 1978, the court ruled the First Amendment did not give the press the right to enter a jail to film. The court wrote that, quote, the media have no special right of access in the jail, different from or greater than the according to the public generally. Right. And this is what's changed over the time, is that they're telling you, well, you know, why should they have a right? Now, they've worked over the time to work in that right and create a situation where they are special. Well, because we're serving a public good. Well, no, you're not. You're being paid three figures today. You're no longer serving a public good. You're doing what you're told and paying or being paid to deliver an agenda from a company that's influenced by big pharma and so on and so on. These are companies with bottom lines. They're no longer a public service like they were originally set out. News, when it first started, was a public service. These people did this for the public. Same with politicians, for that matter. They used to have actual jobs and then come do this because they believed in fighting for our republic. Today, they make three figures and don't care about you, right? You can see where things have gone. But they don't have any better right than you do. Justice Potter Stewart advanced a different point of view in his concurring opinion on the decision, quote, that the First Amendment speaks separately of freedom of speech and freedom of the press in no constitutional accident. It's not, it says, but an acknowledgement of the critical role played by the press in American society. He wrote, the Constitution requires sensitivity to that role and to the special needs of the press in performing it effectively. Now, this is a quote that's pointed to argue that they're separate, that they are special and that you don't get to be it. But that's not what that says. It says very clearly, simply, that there is a special role, a critical role played by the press, and that needs to be protected. But it doesn't define what the press is. And the press, as it's clear in the Constitution, and as they've routinely ruled before this, is you, is anybody reporting and conducting journalism, research, and then reporting on it for people. Like, that's the point. Now, it says, at times, the court has recognized a right of press access, such as the right to attend criminal trials in Richmond Newspapers, Inc. versus Virginia. And it says, however, the court reasoned that by history and tradition, both the press and the general public had a right to attend such trials, meaning that there was no special right of access for the press. So the only reason the press was allowed is because the public were, so they ruled, well, they can go because the public can, because they're the same. The court reasoned that, quote, a presumption of openness inheres in the very nature of a criminal trial under our system of justice, meaning people can go in. In other words, the court framed the right of press to attend a criminal trial as simply the right of the public access because of the same. It says scholars Patrick J. Charles and Kevin O'Neill criticized the court's approach in Richmond Newspapers of equating press access with the general right of the public access, quote, because the role of the press is to keep the public informed, individual members of the public will not likely undertake their own investigations of the prison system or other government institutions. So it makes no sense under the press clause to define press access in the terms of public access. Now, you know why that's incredibly subjective and wrong? Because there's two major assumptions being made right there. One, that the news does that, right? This is the assumption that they're this, you know, this is where it began, right? This is they're so far above everybody, right? They're the Cronkites of the world, and they're so respected, and so they are just above reproach. Well, that was never really the case. That was the illusion that's been broken this today. Like, they're just as pliable and manipulated, just like the CIA worked with them, just probably more back then than they did today. The point is that he's assuming that the media is likely to undertake their own investigations as opposed to just blindly report what's good for their agenda. And they're also assuming that you, as an individual independent, wouldn't do those things. Now, why would that be the assumption? Why would it be the assumption that you're less likely to do your due diligence? You see, it's just an assumption. And the reality is that they're no different. They've been made to be different because they've created their own special class today. This person seemed to be a part of building that. It says, part of the problem has been the court's trouble with determining exactly who is a member of the press. The court struggled with this in the context of a journalist privilege to keep sources confidential in Brandsburg versus Hayes, writing, quote, the informative function asserted by representatives of the organized press in the present cases is also performed by lecturers, political pollsters, novelists, academic researchers, and dramatists. Also, or it says almost any author, not necessarily news, but just a writer, may quite accurately assert that he is contributing to the flow of information to the public. That's correct. that he relies on confidential sources of information and that these sources will be silenced if he is forced to make disclosures before a grand jury. That's a quote from the court. This problem of defining the press by only exacerbated is only exacerbated in an age of bloggers and citizen journalists. But it seems very clear, even by this final ruling in 1972, by the point he's basically saying, well, you can't define just journalists in this case of context of privilege to your information, because pretty much everybody meets that definition in the same field of work. Journalists, pollsters, novelists, anybody, that they have information that needs to be protected. And they're right. In this day and age, the point is, all we have to do is rely back on the same rulings that have routinely found that it's the same thing. The point being, it's obvious the Constitution and the Supreme Court has been undeniably clear on this fact. And yet, Washington State couldn't care less. They just decide to rule that if you're on YouTube, then you're not a press. You're not a member of the press. And we will keep you out of these locations. So you know what needs to happen now is we need to make a massive conglomerate. I mean, honestly, that's the last thing I want, to be honest, but just somebody out there make a huge grouping of people that all have different things and then represent them in some formal way and then push your way in. The point is, back to the original, they won't care. Let's say you have somebody with $1 billion out there that wants to literally start their own newspaper. Like, look at it this way. Do you think that if One America News or one of these other groups came up, that, you know, the point is they don't allow them in, even though they are actually out there doing the same thing, even to the level that they are. So this is arbitrary and subjective. It just shows you that it's about stopping you from reporting the reality, or more specifically, stopping other people from looking at you like you are actually reputable. It's pathetic, childish, and shows you that we're having an effect. That's what it does. Now, since we're already going pretty long, let's finish the last little section here. Lab leak story. The illusion of it all. And me, Spiro is right on the same mindset as I am. He says, I don't trust the lab leak story. I don't believe this was accidental. The attached agenda makes that obvious. And I agree with that. Many of us said once the bat soup story fell apart, that everyone would look at the level 4 biolab and say that it must have come from there, investigate World Military Games. He was one of the early ones talking about this as well. And this is, it's not a slam dunk, but it's definitely something that nobody wants to point at. And what he links to is, top U.S. experts say science suggests COVID-19 came from lab. Great. Who didn't see that coming? Oh, you mean the same top U.S. expert that said this was a debunked theory a moment ago? Great. I'm sure we can trust them. You mean the same top U.S. experts that said the WMDs were in Iraq, or the same top U.S. expert that said that Bolivia was a fake election, even though it turned out to be real, or the same U.S. experts that said that Iran had this, or that Venezuela had that, or that Syria or Iraq, or on and on and on. But yeah, let's trust them this time, guys, because the China bad guy. God, it's just so pathetic how the same people fall for the same trick over and over and over. Of course they're going to say that, because that's what look, even if it's the truth, this is what they're driving at. And I think that the reality is, even if it's the truth, it is so far much, it's so much bigger than what they're trying to, you know, pigeonhole it into. This is not about just one location. This is about multiple countries, multiple funding, the material coming from the US, the funding, everything involved here. The research itself coming from, started in the United States and then was outsourced to China. It's ridiculous to pretend that if you can talk about the Wuhan discussion as a leak, you cannot talk about that without including the United States just as culpable. As well as the fact that it's not a leak, guys, or a lab leak. It would be this is a bioweapon. If it got out, and it is what they're saying it is, clearly it's not just the same old SARS-CoV-1. Clearly it's not Ebola or something like that, which would be a leak, something they already had that was natural, that leaked out. This is something they worked on, gain of function, that either leaked or got out intentionally, which means it's a bioweapon because they altered it. Do you not notice that obvious sidestep? Like, it's so clear that they're trying to play this game and they want it to be all about China bad guy. And this is at a time when we were talking about the exact same. Now, the main point is not saying this is what happened, but just theorizing about the possibility that it came from a lab in general. And we were laughed at, censored, and deleted. Now, here they are talking about the same thing. And now they say, well, we think for sure. Well, also recognize that the same experts are looking at the same information. There's no new data here, guys. The same data has been sitting on this discussion for a year or more. So Did they? Well, I don't even need to say so. We already know it because they've already admitted it. They sat on this information and didn't tell you anything because they didn't want you to know about it. Didn't want you to talk about this until it was time. So it's part of an agenda that's not even deniable. Here it is. New SARS-CoV-2 has genome sequencing combination called CGG-CGG. It's extremely rare, except when doing gain of function. Shocking. Shocking. We've told you this 1,000 times. You have a Nobel laureate telling you that this has obviously been altered with HIV. You have 1,000 different people telling you this is damn obvious. The idea, and they'll understand, the gain of function does not necessarily mean that it's more virulent, that it's more dangerous. There's any number of things they could do to this, just maybe arguably simply just to seem to make it more transmissible. So it spreads a lot, but it's not actually that dangerous. That seems like what's going on here. Or it was an accident. Who knows? At the end of the day, this reality has been there since day one and nobody wanted to pay attention until now they're saying fake news, right? And you got all those people that go Fauci this and Fauci that. It's not about Fauci. Fauci is the sidestep. You're being deceived. And I said that from the moment that everyone on the Republican side wanted to make this all about Fauci bad guy, China bad guy, Fauci bad guy. Stop being reductive and open your mind to the bigger picture. It's not just one person or one thing. It's not just the Democrats or just the Republicans. Get out of your two-party mindset. And when I say that, that doesn't just mean partisanship. It means the idea of reducing things down to two childishly obvious binary choices. The world doesn't work that way, guys. There's always more than two choices. And the truth is that they want you to be stuck in that same old thing. It's either this or it's that. Left or right. Blockchain, good or bad, right? Only these two choices. Oh, you're a bad guy. Very childish. But here's the article. Science suggests a lab leak. And you can read it for yourself. I mean, it's all, this is an obvious push to drive the idea with all the same information that it's only the lab, it's only from them. China covered it up. The U.S. is fighting for freedom, of course. Now, what does this lead to? Here's the real point. What does this lead to? Right? Why now allow the discussion of a lab leak? What does it actually lead to? Because you realize the lab leak in the beginning to discuss the idea of the fact that this bioweapon or whatever it is possibly came from a lab, that didn't help their agenda at all. In fact, all it did was possibly point the finger at them at a way early stage than they wanted to. So they just suppressed it and they hid it from you. Now, where does it do now? What's changed since then? Ah, the vaccine is present. The injection is being given. Okay, so suddenly shoehorning in the fact that it could have come from a lab and now even just doubling down and be like, it came from a lab. We're certain now. We think so. We definitely think it came from a lab. Well, one, that solidifies in your mind that this is in fact something that's dangerous. Right? Because, well, it's a lab leak. That means it was something dangerous that got out. So that means that it is dangerous and people are suffering. But it wasn't our fault, though. It's China. They did it. Okay. So it justifies the vaccine. So now people that were questioning the whole narrative are going to swing back around and go, well, it came from China. So they're the bad guy. My government is trying to save me from China. So I'm now going to take the injection because this is dangerous. Right? Even though this is clearly not the full story. It makes you feel that this is real, that it is there, and that the vaccine is necessary. That's what it does. You think that's a coincidental timing? How many coincidences can we actually have? Well, as Danae Rancourt points out, priceless correction of a fact check. We lied, but it's still true, maybe. Just like with the lab leak and everything else, it was fake news up until it wasn't. Now, if that is possible, then nothing is sacred and nothing is real, guys. They're going to shift. And I mean, the whole point is people that trust these fact checkers or anything else, they buy it because it's on here. So tomorrow, if they switch it back, well, they'll start saying it the other way and say, well, the fact checker said, so it's real. But they switched it 3 times. It doesn't matter. Their final one was this. So that's the one. We've all seen it. There's this like religious adherence to what the fact checker said. Even though they just said it was fake and now they're saying it's real and now we all believe it's real because the fact checker said. So were they wrong before? No, they're not. What do you mean? How can they not be wrong if they just changed it? Well, that's what we're staring at here. They're playing the game. Fact check, inventor of method used to test for COVID-19, didn't say it can't be used in virus detection. Didn't say it can't be used. Great job on that one. Nice double negative to confuse people. But the reality is that we've already talked about this. I've even shown you this exact article, but it's just relevant again today that Carrie Mullis, was very clear about the fact that this is not something that should be used for viral for the purpose they're using for today. The PCR test should not be used how they're using it today. And Kerry Mullis said this very clearly. Now, all they did was swing in and go, he wasn't talking about COVID, so that's not even true. Well, he never even mentioned COVID. He's talking about in general for using it for, you know, for testing viral transmission, or how, I can't blank on the word for some reason, to test whether or not it's present. So here they say, now they come back months later after they already have the entire internet saying, that's fake news. He didn't say that, you stupid conspiracy theorist, without any due diligence. Now, those people that said that, they'll never go back and look at this. They've already made their mind up. That's why you got people saying any number of things, like it stays in the ejection site or whatever, even though their own science is saying the opposite, because they're only trusting narrative today. They're not actually looking at science. The verdict of this fact check has been changed from false to misleading. So you mean you're wrong. I got it. To reflect that the quote examined may have been a fair reflection of Mullis's views, even if not a direct quote. But the body of the text is updated in places to further clarify this. So the quote examined may have been a fair reflection. You realize how insulting that is? What do you mean may have been? Is it or not? But it clearly it is, because they changed it. So they don't even have the courage to say we were wrong. That's what Denny is making fun of. Priceless. We lied, but we didn't. It's just, why do you trust these people? Even if you think they're just simply wrong, that means that the next one they could be wrong about because of their over-reliance on any number of things. But here's Mike Pompeo telling you what China doesn't want you to know about the mysterious lab activity. Yeah, because we can really trust Mike Pompeo, right? It's not like he hasn't lied about stuff like this. Lie, cheat, and steal Pompeo, right? Mr. CIA. This is going to make you laugh out loud. June 4th, Mike Pompeo has warned that China does not want the world to know about the secret of military activity taking place at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in the lead up to the outbreak. Okay, so why don't you just tell everybody? Right? I mean, if you know something, right? He wants to believe he's a master at this. He's really bad at this. Ham-fisted, clumsy, pretending there's some secret like we did with Iran, but we can't tell you because national security, but just trust me because bad guy. That looked really stupid when you did it then. It looks stupid now. He's telling you about stuff that they know. Why? If it's true, because they were there. Because there was a U.S. presence there in that lab before this happened, as well as afterward, by the way. You know why? Because the WHO went there while still having mostly funding from the U.S. government, which meant that they went there with mostly U.S. personnel. That's how it works. So U.S. personnel were there right in the beginning. And Trump says, we didn't know what was going on. Come on. You guys are blind if you don't understand this by now. That statement was directed at the people that support Trump alone. But the reality is that he's trying to tell you there's some secret stuff going on, but we're not going to really tell you. I just want to float the idea that they don't want you to know what we know and will not tell you though. Very smart. Talk about, you know, this is the kind of cloak and dagger. He must have been the worst spy in the world. Mike Pompeo, who served as Donald Trump's Secretary of State, has spoken out about secretive military activity taking place at the Wuhan lab ahead of the outbreak of coronavirus. Mr. Pompeo said that China, quote, does not want us to know what its military were doing at the same laboratory which carried out researchers on coronaviruses. Oh, you mean like all your laboratories? You mean like Fort Detrick and all the rest of them? I guess we just left that part out. And well, yeah, and which, by the way, are literally military operations, unlike there, right? But now the military's there, so, it's all militarized in this country. So it's just so funny how he frames these things. And by the way, I'm not trying to say that China is not just as guilty. I'm just saying the way Pompeo is doing this is really embarrassing. He told Fox News' Laura Ingraham that China, quote, has no desire for the world to know what happened. Okay, so he starts off by saying they don't want us to know. Okay, what are they doing? Well, they have no desire for the world to know what happened. Okay, are you going to get to it? Or no, apparently not. And as the Biden administration continues to push for China to further probe the possible leak, Ms. Ingraham even posited whether experts could rule out a dual-use technology that could be used for both peaceful and military aims. Yeah, because that's not a perfectly planted idea to go, well, it can be used for good. That means the good guys will use good stuff and the bad guys are using bad stuff. So when Pompeo talks about our programs in the same exact way, even though he doesn't, that's for good program stuff because we're good guys. This is kindergarten stuff, man. Mr. Pompeo responded, we don't know, but people talk about this as if we don't know very much. Is that not the dumbest statement you ever heard in your life? So she asks him point blank and he goes, well, we don't know. But people talk about this as if we don't know very much. You just said you don't know, which means you don't know. But they talk about it as if we don't know much. Well played. Quote, we actually know an awful lot, though. But you just said we don't know. Okay, we'll forget that. We know there's a gain of function research. We know there was gain of function research that this lab was level 4 and had security leaks before. Did you hear that? Okay, what else has gain of function research? Oh, everywhere in the United States. You mean the actual gain of function research that was carried on in Wuhan started in Fort Detrick and carried on after 2014, even though they did the moratorium, which we've proven. And his emails have been pretty clear as well. So the problem is that they did gain of function research. Okay, well, so did you. The lab was level 4. Okay, well, so is Fort Detrick. And they had security leaks before. Oh, well, so did Fort Detrick. So is that not just... So if his issue is that that's what they know, you know all about that about Fort Detrick. So you don't care about Fort Detrick? Okay, so you're a complete hypocrite. It's just so pathetic. They're framing that as exactly what happened in Fort Detrick. Quote, we know there were doctors who became ill and were hospitalized in the fall of 2019. Well, that happened in Fort Detrick. What was the Chinese Communist Party's intention? Maybe exactly what you were doing. Maybe you worked together. Maybe you're both accomplishing the same thing. I mean, the reality that there was two outbreaks around Fort Detrick right after this all happened, that they had multiple lab leaks. They actually shut it down for national security reasons. I've covered all of this. They wouldn't tell anybody what happened. They said, oh, we can't talk about it. Which, by the way, that's the lab where they work on coronaviruses, work on all these things. And then there was people at the World Military Games that were sick after they leaving from, I mean, over and over and over. But all they can do is point to these surface level points that they all have the same place and then claim that there are people the security leaks. Now, I haven't seen evidence of security leaks in regard to Wuhan other than, like, not leaks that would be like, material got out. And I'm trying to remember. I don't feel like I've seen any of that. I've seen leaks in regard to like personnel stuff, but the reality is that we've seen these leaks from Fort Detrick and the CDC's admitted to one leak every 3 days for 7 years. I guess Pompeo just left that out in his comparison. It says, he continued, we know there was military activity taking place at the same lab. So what does that even mean? Fort Detrick is a military base. So does that mean that Fort Detrick is just as concerning because it was military activity? This is all resting on the idea of China bad guy. So if military there, military bad, laboratory bad. Just trust Mike Pompeo. Quote, we don't want what? I think that's just a typo. We don't know what they were doing, but we do know that they don't want you to know. God, that is pathetic. Where are the supporters of Mike Pompeo? That has got to be the stupidest thing. So the whole thing boils down to, we have no idea what's happening, but we know that they don't want you to know. So China, look at China. Woo, they're bad over there. They're doing stuff. We don't know what it is, but they're hiding stuff. That's the gist of this. Yet all the evidence he just spouted off is verifiable about the U.S. government, Fort Detrick, their research, their material, their funding, and on and on and on. Quote, when we get to the end of this, we will have demonstrated that the Chinese knew what had happened and their virology lab was at the center of it. Yeah, so did you, if that's even the truth. Because you worked in that lab, used your material in that lab, it was your funding in that lab, on and on and on. It's only the center of it because you outsourced your research to that lab. I mean, it's just as likely here that this was a planned effort to make this happen to China, if that's the case. He also added, we know they were doing gain-of-function research using humanized mice. Yeah, so does everybody else. You know who's funding that research? The NIH. Like, this is, for Mike Pompeo to say something like that and not make it clear that it was funding from the U.S. government that funded that research, he is openly trying to deceive you because that's what he does. Because he's a big liar. But finally, something that Mike Pompeo, of course, would pretend is not a big deal. Well, the Pentagon, while Mike Pompeo was blustering on Fox News about how bad guy China, they funneled $39 million to EcoHealth Alliance. EcoHealth Alliance, you know, the quote, charity that funded coronavirus research at the Wuhan biolab accused of being the source of the outbreak. Isn't that funny? Let me see if I still have this up. Yep, there it is. All right, here's Equal Health Alliance, Department of Health and Human Services, right? The group that was funding all of this, or rather that was facilitating the funding, who, by the way, is still being funded. 2030, 2025. So this is ongoing, right? Equal Health Alliance is currently being funded to do the same stuff they were doing before. They just funneled $39 million more dollars of your tax dollars to the group that was funding what they're right now saying was gain-of-function research. You realize how ridiculous this is? So Mike Pompeo can sit here and bluster and be like, they were doing this stuff over there. It was bad and bad, and that's why they're bad guy. But we're going to literally fund the group that funded what we just said was terrible. Is that why would that be? Is Equal Health Alliance not also culpable, or the funding that came from, or the research? Yes. Yes. This is remedial and childish and obvious, but they're just playing on your ignorance and your partisanship. Cause China bad guy. Don't be that childish. Don't fall into these two-party traps, guys. As Buck Sexton points out, the same apparatus of suppression that insisted the lab leak theory was a conspiracy theory have spent over a year shutting down honest debate about masks, about lockdown effectiveness. So right there, you should ask yourself whether that was also something that they were wrong or lying about. Authoritarian censorship is a bad idea, even when some of its proponents wear lab coats. Well put. It just is time for people to see through this painfully obvious ploy, guys. It's here. It's in front of us. It is waving red flags, or white flags, as it were, trying to, you know, they have lost control of this. We need to capitalize on how just they are drowning in what's going on. And if we don't take control of it, if we don't capitalize on the momentum, they will put it back where they want it. It happens every single time. It is time to make things happen. It's time to make waves. It's time to stand up and tell people that we, like from the very beginning, back when it was about masks, stand up and tell people, I will not comply. I am not going to do this. I'm going to go out without it. I'm going to show you that you don't need it. Now is that time. Now is the time to make campaigns and flyers and push this out there. People need to know that this is dangerous, that what's happening is risking their lives, that children are at danger, but they don't need it, that everybody out here is by and large a 0.14, that's the average anyway, 0.14% at risk, period. Now, if you add up all of the adverse events, including the 1% number we're talking about, you are at higher risk of adverse events. Now, yes, that's including things like headaches and whatever else, but you're at a higher risk of having adverse events, potentially serious, which can kill you, than having something that's the flu, especially if you're under 50, especially if you have no comorbidities, and especially if you're under 25 when it's 0.01%. That's what it was. Very clear. Time to push back, guys. Thank you for being here, and thank you for paying attention, asking questions, researching the actual science they don't want you paying attention to. And by the way, help me get this out. Help me spread this. I finally got caught up on the clips. That's what I was showing you earlier today. Finally. And I got some great new ones coming up from Brock, and I'm gonna stay up on these now and get them out every single week. I just got so buried with a lot of stuff there for a minute, but there's a lot more coming, and the clips will help us share this stuff out in short bursts to help us see it. Oh, and by the way, I believe Star is going to be working on setting up some new social media accounts to do even smaller clips, like little quick bursts of stuff on Instagram and whatever, TikTok or whatever else she wants to start to help get this out there everywhere. So more coming your way of small things. We have interviews. Taylor's editing her interview with Dr. Peter McCullough. So that might be coming out tomorrow, but it's coming out soon. A lot coming your way. Thank you for being here. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.